This is PFW in progress.
Randy, off the internet.
No! No, come on! Leave me alone! But Sharon, I got stuff to do! I gotta see my credit rating, and I gotta send an email to Nelson and check out Foley's vacation photos.
You don't have to do all that now. You can do one more thing, and then it's bedtime.
One more thing?
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
Whoever this person is, he has played World of Warcraft nearly every hour of every day for the past year and a half. Gentlemen, we are dealing with someone here who has absolutely no life.
Paul Perillo.
Mom, tell them. Tell them I'm not fat, I'm just big bone. Tell them all their stories about how everyone in your family was big as a child and then groomed their bodies.
Oh, sweetie, those were all lies. You're just fat.
And Andy. And Andy?
I'm a pretty bad kid.
Really? What's the worst thing you've ever done?
I stole the head off a statue once.
Andy Hart.
Wow, that's pretty hardcore. That's like this one time when I didn't like a kid, so I ground his parents up into chili and fed it to him.
Eric Scalavino.
I'm not going to be confused anymore just because you say I should be. My name is Bud. I'm 8 years old. I'm blood type O, and I'm bi-curious.
PFW in progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
What?
You've been on your computer all weekend. Shouldn't you go out and socialize with your friends?
I am socializing, Arthard. I'm logged on to an MMORPG with people from all over the world and getting XP with my party using TeamSpeak.
I'm not an Arthard.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. We are basking in the glow of another Patriots victory. This one, 35-21 over the San Diego Chargers. And I'm going to say right off the bat, another brilliant game plan by Bill Belichick. We'll talk about that when we get into the show. But a PFW in Progress will be here until 2 o'clock, as we are every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday during the season. Webradio at Patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline here at the Subway Fresh Broadcast Studios. Andy's here. Paul's here. Fred's here. Kevin's in the booth. Guys. So what do you think? We're 2-0 as are two other teams in the AFC East. So it's a race at the top here.
Battle for the decision this Sunday in Buffalo.
And one of those teams, Buffalo Bills, are coming up. And we're going to talk about whether or not we should be worried about the Fitzpatrick-led Buffalo Bills. I know.
Be a short conversation.
Buffalo Bill Nation's starting to buy in. They like this guy.
They should.
They like this guy.
They're fans. They should love him as much as.
Oh, you're talking about Fitzpatrick specifically or the team?
Well, both. But
because the team, I have no fear of. But Fitzpatrick has done it long enough now that he's not a terrible quarterback. I don't think he's a guy you can live with as a franchise guy moving forward. They need to get themselves a quarterback of the future. But for a stopgap guy, there's a lot of players in the league that have been worse than him over the last 15-20 games.
All right. So,
right?
So we'll talk about the Bills, but first we want to talk about this. I think it was, the more I think about it, the better I like this win. I know a lot of people came out of the game worrying about the 422 yards that
I think
Rivers
you're right, Freddie. I think you should be very excited about this win. Yeah. And I'm not just saying that because I picked San Diego to win. Yeah. I think they played and beat a very good football team, just like Bill Belichick said, and not once, but several times, Sunday and Monday.
Right, and I think that they played and beat a team the only way they could play and beat this team. And let me explain what I'm talking about here. I think the San Diego Chargers is an immensely talented team. And I think that unless the Patriots do what they did, they don't match up well with these guys, specifically on defense. And I think they went into there saying, we're going to take out Antonio Gates, and they did that to perfection. We're going to allow.
Really? Did they take him out?
I don't know.
Well, I'm just asking because Paul asked Bill how they shut him down. Don't shut him down. You just try to hang on.
You just try to hang on.
Bill, he didn't catch a pass. They threw him one pass.
Now, I will say that San Diego, I think, was more than content to allow that to happen because they never went to him. It's one thing to take a guy out and you try to force the ball to him 5, 6, 7 times. They threw the ball to him twice.
Well, it also didn't really hurt their offense.
No,
that's
my point.
Was A, Mike Tolbert, and B, the other turnovers.
To me, the brilliance of the game plan is offensive.
But I think
offensively, everything they did worked to perfection.
But I think the way the Chargers were going to beat the Patriots was in a shootout. And the Patriots avoided that, one, by taking Gates out, two, by, you know, as much as you might say, you know, the San Diego Chargers are a good offensive team. When they play other good teams, they will make mistakes. And that's why they haven't had postseason success over the years.
I'm 1,000% in agreement.
And you didn't think this game was a shootout?
I mean, I think it was a shootout. The Patriots won the shootout.
They only scored, you know, 21 points. That's for
the
Chargers.
They had
one.
For the Chargers, that is not a shootout.
Oh, it was a shootout.
And
they had eight drives of 70 or more yards.
If the Chargers score more than 24, they win this game.
And you would have been wrong.
You would have been wrong.
No, but I think different things would have happened if they scored those extra points.
But it was a shootout.
It wasn't a shootout. It was not a shootout. 21 points or 20, whatever they scored. It's not a shootout.
First of all,
for the Chargers.
The score was high enough.
Strictly by points, maybe it wasn't, but it was a shootout.
Well, to me, it went well over the over. So that's a shootout, number one.
Well,
and number two,
they moved the ball at will.
They moved the ball at will. You moved the ball at will. You scored.
I think
they made mistakes. You win.
That's how
you win the game.
Belichick knows the Chargers. He knows what type of team they are. They will make mistakes. He was willing to give them those checkdowns, make them have to go down the field.
Checkdowns.
Fred, I don't think. Listen, I'm with you on your enthusiasm, your excitement for this game because of the quality of the opponent that you beat. But they made a slew of big plays. Vincent Jackson was wide open 30 yards downfield about five different times in that game.
I think it wasn't just checkdowns. I think you can't take away everything. They chose to take away Antonio Gates.
But I'm not saying
that. And they
that.
Did that. You're not going to be able to take away Vincent Jackson.
Now, in retrospect, do you think that he would go in with the same game plan the next time?
Yes.
No chance.
Absolutely. And hope that one of his guys makes the play Jackson. Absolutely.
He would definitely do something different on Jackson than he did in that game. Allowing him to run free throughout the middle of the field the way he was.
Let me tell you something.
You can't allow a guy to get 200 yards like that.
I'm not sure. I think maybe he overrated McCourty. He thought McCourty could do a better job handling Jackson.
That's my point. I don't think he'd go in with
sure
the same thing.
Could have done much else because he felt he could try to take away Gates because McCourty allowed him to do that.
What would you rather have happen?
The plan was the way McCourty played against Jackson.
Would you rather have Gates catch 10 passes or Jackson 10 passes?
Gates.
Me too.
Yeah. Because he's going to catch
And I think the next time these teams
can
play,
do less with them because he's not the athlete he once was.
Exactly. The next time these teams play, I would expect Gates to get a lot more catches and Jackson to have a lot fewer.
Maybe, depending on
how McCourty's playing at that time. Maybe he recovers and you say, okay, now he's... I think they tried to use McCourty like a Revis-type corner.
Right.
We can match up our best with their best and do everything else.
You're going to make fun of me, but I think we're focusing on the wrong thing. I think all the
we'll get to the offense.
We need to get to the offense because this is historic stuff.
No, and you're right. We're going to get to the offense, but I think that Belichick knows enough of the San Diego. They are extremely dangerous team, especially against the Patriots defense as it stands right now. And Belichick knew that, and I think he did what he had to do to win this game, and it worked.
Well, yeah.
I think it worked because of what you did offensively. Not defensively.
Well,
offensively.
I think defensively you made the plays you absolutely had to make. Yeah.
Absolutely had to make. You made them.
But you can play like that when you have 35 points on the board and you're making the other team do the things that they did.
I said upstairs, all these injuries in the defensive backfield, if they didn't have this offense, I'd be concerned, but it's almost irrelevant. Right. You could put me, you, and Paul out there.
That's why.
And they're going to have to score 30 to win.
That's why I say that I think we're focusing on the wrong stuff.
Well, now to Paul's point,
Fred is because he
why Belichick felt he could do what he did on offense is because he has complete faith. I mean, on a defense, is because he has complete faith on his offense. If you didn't have that offense, that's not a good game plan, you know. But because you had that offense, it worked.
But man, I can't recall seeing an offense just decimate defenses. And this was a good defense.
Well, and
I don't think they're overrated. I think this is a good defense. Is it number one in the league? No. And Kevin Acey made a great point on the pregame social about all the special teams problems they had last year creates a lot of short fields. And therefore,
puts a lot of pressure on the defense.
But you finish number one in yards allowed because, well, they took over on your 12-yard line. They went 12 yards and they scored a touchdown.
Right.
Well, you only allowed 12 yards.
Well, that's true.
So it's a little bit deceptive. But I think it is a good defense. It's not a great one. It's a good one. And they made it look silly.
Well, here's
for all but, what, three drives in the game. They had two punts in the fourth down that they went for. In the third quarter, in the start of the fourth, it got a little hairy in those three drives. Other than that, they scored on all four drives in the first half, including an absolutely ludicrous two-play drive that they got a field goal with 9 seconds left. They made San Diego look absolutely ridiculous.
I think San Diego made San Diego look stupid in that drive.
Okay. Even Deion Branch in his post-game
press conference was almost mocking them. I like it when they don't know what they're doing or look like they don't know what they're doing.
But you know what was funny about that?
That was embarrassing.
You know what? He was looking at that. You talk about just a lack of awareness. That cornerback was playing like, do you remember last year in Chicago in the snow on the last play of the half? And everybody was like, well, they'll just take a knee or whatever. And they just threw a bomb to Branch and somehow the safeties let him get behind. But that was like 70 yards. This was like the only thing they could do was what they did to try to get in field goal range. And he played it like, well, he's going to try to run by me. They're going to try to score a touchdown.
All you have to do is hold them up for a few seconds, and they don't have time to kick, you know?
And the amazing part is we thought he might have been short on the – because they got two plays out of it. And
the first play was no good.
Right.
I don't think that was a good play.
The only way it was good was they allowed you to get the next, eight more or whatever he got on the next that last play where he literally chose what he wanted and then hopped out of – That was as embarrassing for a defense as – That, to me, was the equivalent of, I also saw what I think is the most embarrassing run in the history of the NFL, which it was Patrick Passian in its embarrassment. That Mike Tolbert run, where he, not the goal line one, that one is just a questionable run that was forced by the defense. Him trying to cut back and go around wide in the backfield at 250 pounds, what he is, he forgot what he is. He had like illusions of grandeur, like that he had become Barry Sanders or Bo Jackson or Marcus Allen. You're a big, fat fullback who some team has chosen to give you the ball a little too often, in my opinion. You need to make do with it, because that gave the Patriots the game right there in some way.
You remember, I actually said that to you the first week, because I watched a lot of their game on Red Zone Channel the first week when they played Minnesota, and I was like, the future guy in this offense is the fullback. He ended up getting all the touchdowns and making these huge plays. And it seems stupid what I was saying, but to me,
he did it the right way the first week. And even in this game on the sideline, that play is what you want. You want him going head to head with somebody because he can run him over. He did it last week on that 7-yard touchdown or whatever it was. Absolutely ran through the defender. He did it on the sideline here when we were talking about did he step out of bounds or not. He can run people over. But I don't want him thinking, I got to find open field and get in space.
I can make guys miss in space.
Run like Andy Hart ran in high school. Look at a defender, see the defender, run him over and get your 7 yards.
Lower your pads and go. Once again, the tempo of the Patriots offense had an effect on the opposition. And I was, in my mind, a little critical of Tom Brady when he was hovering over that charger that was down, you know, whether or not he was faking it to slow it down. And then we see last night in the Giants game, two Giants just flopped. And it was obvious, actually, to the point where the league might step in here, I hear.
Really?
To warn teams about faking injuries. But, you know, give credit to Brady to kind of call that out there, because that might have been what they were doing.
Because he knows it occurred, because the Patriots do it. Well, circa 2000, whatever, in
2003.
Yeah. That wasn't necessarily to slow the tempo down, but just to stop the game because they needed a timeout. Right. You know,
business is being done. Until the league cracks down on it, it's a way to do it.
For 2 weeks in a row, Patriots tempo
has
had.
That's not accurate what you just said about stopping the game for a timeout. They stopped the game for the tempo.
Right.
That's exactly what they did.
They needed to get some substitutions in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with a timeout.
But it wasn't like Peyton Manning was running on the snow.
Yes, it was.
I'll stop it.
Fred.
You have to argue every little thing. It's unbelievable.
First of all, he's the one who brought up the Patriots, not me.
Okay, forget about...
Why are you bringing me into your little argument?
Forget about...
But I mean, if you're going to talk about what the Rams did last night and what the Patriots did on Sunday, that's what the Colts did in 2003. It's all three with the same thing.
Okay.
They're running a high-tempo offense, and the defense is faking injuries. Okay. I mean, that's just
It happens, Fred, to all 32 teams, including this.
I'm not making fun of the teams for faking injuries. That's gone on since the dawn of time.
For the second time in a week, the Patriots' tempo has had an adverse effect on their opponent. And, you know, you'd say, well, why don't all teams do that? Not all teams can do that, you know, because you really do risk getting off the field quickly and getting your defense back on too soon. But with the Patriots and Tom Brady, there's that
Tom Brady.
That much trust in this guy that he's just not going to screw it up.
Well, there's also, I believe...
Actually,
have to be elite at quarterback.
They stalled a little in the third when they went out of the fast tempo.
You also have to be very good at receiver in terms of being on the same page.
Yeah, sure.
Because if you have Ocho Cinco on the field in all these, and he runs one route, the wrong way, and that leads to an incompletion, that stalls a drive, and you're off the
field.
I also didn't think they had as much high tempo, up-tempo in this game
as they mixed it in occasionally.
And it certainly, I think Fred's right, it certainly did bother San Diego.
No, they slowed down when they bring Ocho on the field.
But they didn't have it, you know, from wire to wire, basically, like they did against Miami. And I don't think that's the offense. I think it's still Belichick's discretion. It's what he thinks is going to work against the individual team. Now, early on in this game, I thought San Diego had some pressure. They had a sack in the first drive that created a long yardage situation that Brady converted to a 17-yard pass to Welker. And they overcame some of those negative plays, and I think that maybe they looked at that and said, let's try to slow this rush down a little bit and go up tempo. But I don't think they did it as much this game. I don't think it was as big a part of the game plan as it was against Miami.
But it's a great thing to fall back on
and it's
anytime
Brady.
You want.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And, you know, you talked about Manning back in 03 before you yelled at me. You need to have that elite quarterback to do it. And Sam Bradford's trying to do it right now. He certainly is making a bid to be elite.
But he just doesn't have the personnel.
He doesn't have the help around him, and they're making dumb plays. They're in a lot of trouble, too. They have a tough early schedule.
Oh, yeah, they're done. But that's good because he'll get some talent in the draft to surround him.
The actual injury report comes out, or the first one comes out tomorrow. But let's talk a little bit about that because it was a tough game on both sides of the ball, but across the league. But for the Patriots, Aaron Hernandez, there's no official word of what his injury is. It looks like it might be an MCL or something like that, mm-hmm. which over time can heal itself.
Yep.
But he's probably not going to play against the Bills.
Based on reports, he could miss 1 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, a couple other people who were in and out of the game. Patrick Chung was in and out of the game. Who else was a little banged up in this game?
Kyle Arrington reportedly concussed.
Yep.
Rashai Dowling
had a thigh injury early, never returned.
When doesn't he?
Yeah. That's a concern for this guy.
I mean, it's clear that's his issue, and I would not feel good if I had to count on him every week as my starting corner. They are in a nice position. Well, not right now, they're not in a nice position, but when they're all healthy, when they have Bodden and Arrington, they have some depth there, so you can just kind of maximize his use. But we talked about it upstairs. You have one corner, Devin McCourty, who's healthy, and you have one safety, Sergio Brown, who's healthy. Everybody else has some sort of injury right now.
At one point,
Josh Barrett already has a cast on his thumb. Chung looks like he did some damage to his hand as well because he got banged up, and who knows if he's going to be able to play moving forward, at least in the short term. And then you have Lee Bodden, who had a hand injury in preseason. Now he's on the injury report last week with a back injury. And I know he got two holding penalties in the second half, and there's been some people writing that he was effectively benched. He may have been, but to me, it had to be at least partially because of his health, because given all those guys that you just mentioned, Fred, that got hurt during that game, for him to be out for the long stretches that he was healthy didn't make sense to me.
Well, I've kind of gotten the vibe over the first couple of weeks that maybe they're just monitoring his rep.
I agree.
The way he's been used.
Yeah.
But they have issues back there right now. They have no depth and no help.
At one point, Haynesworth kind of lumbered off.
That was weird.
I wasn't exactly sure what his injury was. I know he did get knocked down on the play and
got up
slowly.
But they were stretching his groin, hip flexor.
And then he came back in, which was a good sign.
Yeah, I think that was a tightness. Because the play is he was rushing. Andre Carter was rushing. He got blocked and took Andre Carter out of the play, knocked him on his butt. They kind of went together / celebrated, and then Haynesworth was hurt after that. It was like I think he may have cramped his groin or something just tightened up in between there.
Andre Carter had something on his hand at a charity event last night for Gerard Mayo.
Okay. He
showed up with something on his hand, too, some kind of brace. So
it's a good thing the defense is irrelevant.
I mean, I'd be more concerned
about all the hand injuries.
I'd be more concerned.
Lockout?
No.
You didn't like that little crack that I had?
I got it. I was hoping everyone else did, too.
It's a good thing that there's not more Aaron Hernandez-type injuries, because I think if you had some significant injuries on the offense, I'd be concerned.
Right. I'm taking that one as a positive, because I get to see either Ocho or Taylor Price take on a bigger role in the offense.
My theory on the defensive hand injury is teams are saying to their players, they are going to be looking at technique. You can't launch yourself anymore. You better start trying to wrap up. And these guys are so out of technique shape that they're hurting their hand trying to wrap up, because they usually put their hand down by their side and launch as a missile. Now they don't know what to do with their hands, and they're hurting their hand. That's my theory.
That's a bad one.
Paul's just blankly staring.
Well, I don't want to get yelled at.
It's kind of a joke.
If I make fun of you, you get mad at me.
I thought jokes are funny.
Yeah. Andy picked, Andy put our alternative, cover on Twitter today or on the blog. We were you know, toying with the idea of nose pick as the cover words for PFW because Vince Wilfork had the interception. And it would have been cool, but we thought maybe people would be like, that's too silly.
So instead we put it up on the blog.
So now we put it on the blog. And right. I think, now that I see it, I think we should have.
And one of the first comments was we should have gone with nose picking.
Nose picking? Yeah. I like nose pick better.
Whatever. I think we should have gone with it.
Anyway,
the Stones,
that's
though.
Up on the PFW blog right now if you want to take a look at what it would have been if we had balls.
If you had balls. Let's say you make the decision on the covers.
That's
You're the
true.
Final say.
That's true.
When I want to put certain things on the cover, you shoot them down.
Right.
I'm trying to think of some vulgar ones.
Just saving you from yourself.
They're almost always, and I agree with Fred on this one.
He didn't shoot down Happy Ending.
That's not vulgar.
He didn't shoot. Well, it is if you, certain way you
if,
say
right,
it.
But no, that, you if know. You're like you and everybody named Richard is offensive to you, then
not
vulgar.
Offensive. Funny.
Well, you're referring to the one where Parcells and Belichick were hugging after the game. After that whole week of buildup and the border war, it was a happy ending.
But a happy ending has a certain meaning.
I know what...
For you!
Exactly.
No! For most of the world. Most of our listeners are well aware and have the idea of what a happy ending
is. Do you remember that Brian Morey at that time had no idea what that was? You and
right.
I were like,
right.
it's a double entendre, but right. you know it'll be funny for those right. people, but it also makes sense for the game.
Right.
And Brian Morey's like, I never heard that. I would have not allowed that.
I bet you he'd know
Remember how
now.
Mad he was at us?
Oh, yeah.
Because he realized that you and I and Andy all knew what a happy ending was.
Right.
And he's like, I can't believe you guys would let that happen. He was like,
yeah, but he didn't know. He found out. But
once he found out, he was offended.
You can't let certain people like Andy, you know, hijack the entire English language.
Exactly.
You wouldn't be able to use anything.
But
like
that's
well
like,
chunk.
Like nose pick. We could have used that. Right. I mean, I don't think it's offensive to
anybody who could read, though, knows it's funny.
Right.
Yes, but it is funny.
Whatever grade you reach that you could read that phrase,
right.
you
when go, when a third grader is snickering, you know right. you probably shouldn't do it. You know.
Or, from my view, you know you've hit gold.
But don't you? But it's also different when you play around, you know, like we always – how many times have we had Kevin Falk have a big game and we're like, you know, let's get a picture of Falk on the cover and put, you know, Falk you.
Yeah. Right.
But you can't do that. That's a little different.
Well, you could. Any balls, as Fred would say.
Chris with a TIAN is on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Christian.
Hey, guys. What's happening?
Christian,
how
are
you doing?
Excellent, man. I tell you, watching this offense never gets old.
No, it sure doesn't. It's masterful.
It's historic. It's
But
it's
the ridiculous
amazing.
Part is, you thought 2007, you'd seen it all. Like
this is all
You'd
different.
Never see it again, and now you're seeing it again in a different way.
Yeah, totally different way.
But
just a precise
As equally
machine.
An amazing... rate.
Yeah, I agree. They wowed you in 07 with the big plays. This is just a methodical dismantling
right.
of defense.
And in 07, you said, okay, you finally gave him a ridiculous weapon to play with. He doesn't have any ridiculous weapons right now. He has a lot of good weapons, and maybe Gronkowski or Hernandez will evolve into elite. But right now, he has a lot of good players, and he's making them look great.
Yeah, I mean, that's really why I called, was to compare it to 07 and how much different the personnel is.
Yeah,
when you look at the groupings that Reese posted, you know, everything is out of most of it is out of a two wide receiver, two tight end set, but the tight ends are lining up, you know, are coming off the line, you know, there's so much to it. And the guys going in and out, too, the personnel groupings, like every play.
Yep.
You know, that's the other impressive thing, too.
They've done that a lot over the last couple of years, but to me, I'm a little surprised. I thought next year, the tight ends would literally flow through. I mean, the offense would literally flow through the tight ends. Now is the time. It literally, those are your two core players of the offense. I know Branch and Welker have more catches and they're tied, but
I totally agree.
The offense comes off the tight ends, much like it used to come off of Randy Moss. These guys are now the focal point of the offense.
Now, the only thing I would say, you know, in terms of the whole too tight, too wide set is, and I know that Hernandez made a big deal of not being a wide, he's wide.
Right.
It's three wides and one tight end.
He's
split from the formation more often than not.
Sort of, though.
He's still a tight end. You still
Because you still see him lining up in the backfield. You still see him lining up on the wing.
I said more often than not.
You still see him motioning.
He's a shorter Tony Gonzalez. right?
Well, I think he's Dallas Clark. I think that's what he is.
You know, but he's a pass-catching tight end.
Well, he's a slot receiver. Yeah. I always thought Dallas Clark was a slot receiver, and I think he is a... I mean, we see it in training camp when they go to groupings for wide receiver drills. He's in the same line as Wes Welker and Julian Edelman. They stick together. He's a slot receiver.
But that's kind of my point.
But he does do stuff that you'll never see Welker do in terms of motioning.
I wonder if they try to use Edelman more. You know, I didn't really think of it.
No, I want to see Price or Ocho.
But I'm not sure that...
I'm not sure Edelman will be fun.
I'm not sure Price is suited for that.
Well, oh yeah, there'll be different personnel groupings. They will have different... Yeah, it'll look different. But those are the guys that I want to see if they can become options. Because to me, those are the guys you need to develop.
Sure.
Because right now, this offense, and it's the same as last year. You still don't have anybody necessarily, unless you're saying Gronkowski, but... that can beat somebody one-on-one when the rubber meets the road and it's January 14th or whatever, and you just need people to make physical plays. Well, are we back to where we started, where maybe you don't have that guy? And that's why Ocho was brought here. Don't tell me he wasn't. We talked about that last week. He was brought here so that one-on-one with Cromartie, you say he can make a play. We hope we can win that matchup. So I think you need to develop one of those guys and don't just go, well, Edelman, it's time to slot him in for his two-week span here. Develop the other guys.
Okay. Yeah, hey, Christian, you got anything else?
Yeah, just I heard a statistic this morning that out of the 32 games played, only one team that scored under 21 points in the NFL won a game. So
that is true. I looked today. Every team that won scored over 21.
Yep. Defense is dead.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, as worried as I am about, you know, guys like McCourty and stuff, I mean, I see, I know it's only two games and they've given up a ton of yards, but there's just, you know, I kind of see the potential there for it to be better than it was last year. And I hope I'm right. I mean, you know, they faced Rivers is great and Vincent Jackson is a great wide receiver, but, you know, that's kind of the thing that kind of bothers me, the argument with McCourty that, well, he went up against Brendan Marshall and Vincent Jackson. I think you guys said this last week. Well, he's Devin McCourty. He's not Kyle Arrington. We expect him to, you know, not, you know, make a play every time the ball's thrown away, but not give up 10 catches for 172 yards either.
Right.
Okay.
He's a Pro Bowl corner, first round pick. He should at least be fighting.
Christian, thanks for the call.
Thanks,
Thanks, Christian.
Speaking of that, Stripper sends us a tweet from the Rap Sheet, and Rap Sheet says, Belichick says Patriots cornerback Devin McCourty has played as well as anyone on defense, says I need to ask offenses why they're throwing at him.
Because that's a good way to complete passes at this point.
Or maybe he's the only one one-on-one?
I don't care. That's his role as an elite corner.
Just so you know,
why would Belichick say that? Try to think
because he lies.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Derek Burgess played the position better than anyone had ever played it, and he caught him.
That's true, too. But he's not going to kill his players.
Right.
He's very loyal. He's not going to kill his players. That's one reason. But I also think you could make an argument for that. I don't think they've had a lot of strong individual performances on defense so far.
Well, right. So then you look at as well as anyone else. Yeah, so no one's really stood out yet. Although, you know,
Individually, I don't think they've had a lot of strong performances defensively.
Although Ricardo in Somerville says, hey, Andy.
What?
How about those big plays from Gerard Mayo? You can shut your fat head now, huh? Force fumble and a goal line stand.
I thought the best player on the goal line stand was Devin McCourty.
Devin McCourty, ironically, made the play on the goal line.
Still questioning whether he forced the fumble or Tolbert just pooped himself.
That one I think you're being a little bit ridiculous on.
That's what I do.
He knocked the ball out of his hands, whether it was a fluky forced fumble or not.
Did he use a feather? I didn't know you could feather tickle a guy to drop the ball.
You just hate for no reason.
I don't hate anyone. I like Gerard Mayo.
You hate everyone.
I am like a proud parent who thinks his child is not maximizing his talents. I expect more from Gerard.
Okay. I think Gerard had a much better second game than he did first game.
Yes? Yeah, definitely.
No?
100%. 100% with you.
Bill
would say, that's not saying much.
Yeah, he didn't play very well against Miami.
Okay. But I think he showed up.
He showed up in
week two.
100% on board with you. But again, I have high expectations. Just like Devin McCourty.
Okay.
I think Devin McCourty's been fine. If Kyle Arrington were playing that way, I'd say it was Brandon Marshall. It was Vincent Jackson. He was in the area. He just didn't make enough plays. I hold McCourty to a higher standard. He's a first-round pick, Pro Bowler. He's a captain. He showed me he can make plays last year. Now make them consistently.
I'll tell you what I've been a little concerned about with McCourty is the amount of times his man is running by him. You know,
but they did that last year too, and then he would get back in stride with them and make the play.
But running across the field and making plays on crossing road—that's a. There's not a lot of cornerbacks in football that are going to run with Vincent Jackson across the field and prevent those kinds of plays without help. So that I can live with, even though those are big plays. And Vincent Jackson made a lot of big plays on those crossing routes, those deep in cuts on Sunday. He has had at least five or six times this year in two games where his guy has just gotten by him by a couple of yards quickly and been open. Some of them the quarterback has missed, some of them they haven't missed. And he has not been in position to make the plays that he made last year that Andy's talking about. Good throws have beaten him, and people want to keep saying, well, you know, look at some of the pass and catch combinations that they've had. Brandon Marshall made an unbelievable catch. Well, are we just going to assume that the other team can't make the play?
Right, and I think you hit on it right there, because I remember a play from Sunday where even though it was an incomplete, I thought McCourty really guessed wrong on it and was, you know, if it had been a little bit better pass, it would have been a big gain. And I think you kind of hit it there. I think he's guessing a little bit too much instead of just playing it straight. And those are
the ones that have been worrying me, because I don't remember seeing him allow guys to get that open on him last year consistently. Andy's right. There were times where he has great closing speed and made great plays on the ball. But to me, he's been allowing more room on some of those down the sideline plays where he's susceptible to the back shoulder fade because he's scrambling to get back.
Which is what he did last year.
And by the way, Malcolm Floyd getting injured early in that game also had a big impact on the rest of that, because some of those stiffs that came in for him, and you pointed this out, Fred, on the blog, on Kirsch Words, they dropped a ton of passes on him. 15 and 17, Walters and Goodman. They dropped it, and I think Goodman's the guy who left the ball on the field last year, if I recall, isn't he?
Maybe. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of emails from McCourty. You mentioned the blog, Paul. Everybody was all over McCourty on the blog. It's so knee-jerk, you know. You see that guy get beat time and time again.
For a month.
You know, so people are all over him right now. They're worried about whether it's a sophomore slump or he just wasn't that good to begin with. We'll see. You know, obviously, you know, it's a long season. But I have to say that when training camp first started and we saw him out there, you know, he just looked like he got it, and he just had this air of confidence he didn't have last year. He just looked like no one could complete a pass on him in training camp. He looks a little different right now. So maybe somebody needs to take him aside and, you know, kind of get his head right. Tons to talk about. As well as the two catches by Ocho Cinco. Not a big day, but hey, they were both really clutch, good catches. So we're happy about that. We'll be right back after these messages.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never been owned before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Is that bacon I smell?
Grandma must be cooking.
She makes everything with bacon. Bacon pie, bacon shrimp, bacon on the cob.
I know one thing that tastes better than her cooking.
What's that?
The new Bacon McDouble from McDonald's. It's made with two savory pieces of bacon, melty American cheese.
That sounds better than anything Grandma can whip up.
I heard that.
The new Bacon McDouble is here. Right now, you can get two Bacon McDoubles or two large fries or one of each for just $3.33. Price of single item posted on menu board. Price and participation may vary for a limited time.
Hey, just got back from Dunkin' Donuts, grabbed a big and toasty. Any messages?
The presentation needs its 14th revive.
Cool.
You have to fly to China today.
Oh, yeah.
You have a middle seat.
Booyah!
And your car is getting towed.
Bring it!
As we speak, right there.
I live for this!
A big day calls for the big and toasty. It's two fried eggs, cherrywood smoked bacon and cheese on Texas toast. Grab this breakfast favorite at Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
People are excited about the new Dunkin' Donuts K-Cup packs. When Joy Otero heard the news on Dunkin's Facebook page, she wrote, "Love it. Come do the Joy Joy Dance! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, smiley face." Maybe she should try the decaf? America's favorite coffee is now in K-Cup packs. Hurry in today for all five delicious varieties. Available only at Dunkin' Donut stores. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary.
And now, great moments in PFW in progress history.
When we played at Reliant in the Super Bowl, remember how humid it got
it
at the end of that
really,
game?
Really hot.
It was very humid, and the grass got slippery. Remember
but they
that?
Take that field out, you know.
In trays.
Yes, yeah, but right. It stays out in the parking lot.
But if it goes in moist, it doesn't dry.
You're such a child.
Yeah, I can't help it.
I got it too.
No, you
didn't laugh out loud.
Parts of it will stay hard, and other parts,
Jesus,
will the end zones were soggy.
That's another great moment from PFW in progress.
All right, back here in PFW in progress, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline, and the email is webradio@patriots.com. We're down here at the Subway Fresh Broadcast Studios. Got to get all that in.
Freddie, you know when you earlier you were talking about the guys hurting their hands?
Right.
Because they have to tackle now?
Right.
Properly?
Yeah.
And you were saying that was a joke? I like your jokes better when you have like that little drop in there that we played coming back from break when we're talking about the turf in Houston or was it Houston?
Right.
Or Arizona? It was Houston, right?
Right.
You know,
during the Super Bowl.
That was a funny joke.
I'll try to do more of those.
That was a funny joke. That was good stuff.
Okay.
See if we can turn that around and get something better.
Everybody wants to get in on this. I love Tuesdays because everyone's so excited. The email's flowing because everyone wants to get their voice heard. Everyone's excited, win or loss, to be heard. Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Joey Seep is in Florida. Hey, Joey.
Hey. Fred, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Hello, Paul, Mr. Draft. How you guys doing?
What's up?
What's up, Joey?
All right, listen, I got a question. Not really a question. It's a comment, really, and I want to get your take on it. But before I say that, I wanted to tell Fred and you guys, too. I think I've been listening for 10 years. And, I mean, you guys just bring the A game every single week. Tuesday, Thursday, pregame, it's awesome. For the new listeners, it doesn't get any better than you guys.
Well, the reason is we hate the rest of our job so much that we like doing this.
That's certainly true for Paul. He says that all the time.
and it all revolves around a good lunch, right?
That's right.
That's right.
I actually think that is the key.
The greatest Patriots fan in the world.
I think I'm burnt out.
Men of leisure.
All right. Okay, guys, this is what I want to get you. It's not a question. Just comment on this. I'm watching the game. Andre Carter goes in and buries Rivers with a textbook sack, and they throw a flag. And then a short while later, I see a hit on Brady's knees, and it buckled like an accordion, and there's no flag.
Yeah,
and it
looked
worse than the Pollard kick.
Yeah.
And you guys didn't even you got to give me. I'll get off the air and let you comment, but I got to get your take on that.
Absolutely.
Because
thanks.
Something's wrong in my book.
Joey, thanks
There's
for
a
the
lot
call.
Wrong.
Everybody was talking about that.
It was embarrassing for the league.
Based on the way the rules are now, both of those should have been penalties.
Right, but one wasn't.
And one wasn't, and I don't understand that. I don't get this. They painted it out to us pretty plainly. I think it was 2 years ago now, they went through it chapter and verse. If you make contact below the waist, and the initial contact starts below the waist, and you are not blocked into the quarterback, and the quarterback is in the pocket, that is a penalty. And all of those things happened on Sunday with Travis LeBoy.
Yep.
And I don't understand why that's not a penalty. I said it immediately before we even saw a replay. I didn't understand. And you, Andy and I were saying it, and Fred, believe it or not, this is like role reversal.
Right.
Fred originally said, well, I think he was blocked into him. And then we watched on the replay, and we
the
saw
he was.
He lunged into
he
him.
He lunged right. into no. The only thing that saved Brady was the brace.
The brace. Right.
If he had never torn his ACL the first time, he would have torn
and
it on
he
Sunday.
He said that. He says, I don't know why I wasn't wearing this brace to begin with.
Because, especially him.
And all quarterbacks, why they wouldn't wear
well,
it.
Well, because you lose mobility. When you have the brace on, you do give something up in terms of mobility. So for guys like him where mobility is useless, he'd still be able to shuffle and step up. It's the question of the guys that run sometimes,
right.
And it's kind of part
of
their game.
That's the unfortunate. We don't really get to ask officials specific questions like that. Now, first of all, it's a pool reporter kind of situation anyway, but that would be a rule interpretation or something. You're not going to be able to request the pool reporter to ask an official why he didn't call a penalty on that. Now, maybe someone could call Mike Pereira and maybe, or who, I don't even know who's in charge nowadays. I don't even know the guy's name. But you could get something like that, but vague. You're not going to get to talk to the actual official and what
right.
he was thinking at the time. Now, on the flip side, the hit that Andre Carter had, I want to state this. In fact, I hate these new rules with quarterbacks. I'm all for protecting quarterbacks. To me, what Travis LeBoy did, there's nothing wrong with. The guy had the ball in his hand, and he lunged at the ball carrier to try to tackle him. The NFL has legislated that out. Therefore, it has to be a penalty.
Right.
Same thing with Andre Carter. I have no problem with what Andre Carter did on that play. He lowered his helmet down and ended up hitting Rivers right in the midsection with his helmet. To me, it wasn't a helmet-to-helmet hit.
No.
So there's nothing wrong with that. However, the league is legislating that out.
Right.
If you lead with your helmet, you're going to get penalized for that. I hate it. I hate the calls. But the problem I have on Sunday is the inconsistency with the interpretation. To me, they were both roughing the passer calls, and one of them got called and one of them didn't.
Now,
I don't get that.
If Carter's head was to the side,
he's fine.
Even
he's
though
fine.
He drove him in the ground,
oh, yeah.
it would
have
still been an
yeah,
okay tackle.
Only if you
the
pick
referee
him
announced
if you pick
he hit him
up
with the
drill.
Hairline right. of his helmet.
Right.
That, and,
that's,
and that was accurate.
And
on replay, he did.
And but that was a hairline of a call. I mean,
yeah, but,
you know.
But it's a penalty. The problem is, and I said this in the press box, the only thing worse than bad rules is bad enforcement of bad rules. You have to be consistent. If you put the bad rule on the books, then call it. That should have been a penalty. I thought the worst call of the day was the hit on Gronkowski in the end zone that Weddle got flagged for. And that's why all these, you want to know why you looked and you didn't find anybody that's won with fewer than 21 points? Because you can't play defense in this league anymore. All you're going to do is get flagged for everything you do. If you hit a guy, I actually thought the Ocho Cinco catch, the 30-yarder, I thought that was a byproduct of the new rules. I thought Eric Weddle had no intention of hitting the man because he can't hit the man when he makes the catch because that's illegal now, and now he just kind of flies by. You know what I mean? Like, you've taken that whole physicality out of the game.
You've gotten to the point
or
now.
Or it could be that Weddle's overrated.
Well, he sucks.
He is.
No. Now I'm beyond
talk
overrated.
About,
he sucks.
You want to talk about game plans, Fred, and with Belichick? He absolutely destroyed Eric Weddle on Sunday. He got Weddle in situations all day long and took advantage of him. It was in all levels. Deep, middle, running game. He completely took advantage of Eric Weddle on Sunday, so he clearly thinks, like Andy and I, that he's a very, very overrated player.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Mike says he has two thoughts from Sunday's and from Cambridge. He says, one, I was really impressed with the job Chung did on Antonio Gates. They bumped him at the line with linebacker a lot, but after that it was mostly Chung one-on-one, save for the Brown interception. I do think that this hurt the running game, though, as Chung was one of the Pats' best players in the run at Miami. You can't take everything away. And two, I don't really get all the McCourty freakout. He struggled pretty bad at the beginning of last year and progressed throughout the season, but was never really the elite corner that everyone is making him out to be. I also think he has been affected by the defensive change as they are playing more man than they did last year when they mostly played deep zones. And in man-to-man, most corners will struggle against freaks like Marshall and Jackson. Thanks, guy. Love the show. Eric is a bitch.
I think that last thing is
accurate.
Is interesting.
The bitch
and
part?
the man in zone. Now, I don't have numbers to back that up. But I'll say, but don't you think that if that's true, let's just say that's true. Isn't that something to freak out about? He's effective in only one coverage, so that's going to affect the way you're game planning now.
He's a system corner.
Yeah. That's something worth freaking out about, and I disagree that last year he was not an elite cornerback. The last 10 weeks of last year, he was absolutely an elite cornerback, and I don't think he struggled from the get-go. The very first play of the season, he blanketed T.O. down the sideline and broke up a pass. They tested him on the first play of the season against Cincinnati. Palmer threw a bomb to T.O. down the sideline, and McCourty was inside his shirt and knocked the pass away. He never struggled last year. Never.
I'd also like to see the plays this year where it looked like he was struggling because he was in zone and didn't know who his man was and where his zone was. Every time I see him, he just gets beat physically. He's been getting beat down the field, intermediate. He can't stay with guys. That's the problem. I thought last year he was phenomenal, and we talked about it. He would position himself on the back hip of the receiver, and it was almost like he intuitively knew the speed to run at. He didn't even have to check with the receiver. He knew how to be stride for stride, look back, and go get the ball.
And he knew when to look. Well,
that's 100%. Right. It's the exact opposite this year. He looks like, as Paul said, he's trying to catch up and trying to make plays, and in doing so, looks horrible.
And I'll tell you this, maybe teams have noticed last year how he seemed to be on the back hip all the time and then turned and made some plays on the football, and people are saying, you know, instead of constantly trying to do it one way, this is where he tends to go. Let's let him go there. That's where he wants to go. Let's adjust. You know, the Malcolm Floyd play to me was much different than, say, the Nate Burleson play in the Detroit preseason game where he just ran by him.
Right.
You know, Malcolm Floyd got by him and then with his size used a back shoulder kind of approach and turned and made the play because McCourty is spun around and he's looking for the ball. So I think teams might be adjusting to some of the things that he did last year, too. Now it's time for him to adjust.
Right. Quick off-topic question. Who's this Wendy Williams who has a midday talk show and has some of the largest mammaries I've ever seen in my life?
I don't know.
You went right there. Who is she?
I don't know, but I really don't care.
I'm sorry. When male junk comes on the field that's large, on the screen, I'll let you know and you'll be interested.
No, I'm focused on the show.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
Rich, wait a minute. So infomercials and male junk distract him, Rich, but not large breasts.
Rich writes in, thank goodness Fred and Eric are going to the road games. The unspeakable humiliation yourself and Eric would have endured sitting with Paul and Andy on the flight back with the team from San Diego with everyone knowing that they picked the Patriots to lose is too devastating for me to contemplate. Those are the same two who argued now how football cannot be studied via spreadsheet. And uncoincidentally, Fred ranks 1 and Eric 2 in overall point spread after 2 weeks. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
So there you go.
I know Paul's losing to the flip La Chance in the paper.
Football cannot be studied on a spreadsheet. Ask Bill Belichick.
No, it's not Billy Bean stuff.
No.
Oh, terrible.
Just so you know, baseball can't be either. That's why Billy Beans never won anything.
But do you see those commercials where it's like, can you believe what's going on here in Oakland? And you're like, whoa, they won the World Series. Wait a minute, they didn't win the World Series.
Right. Now, I do think that I should create a new rule that when you guys pick against the Patriots, you have to be right.
I was right. I was 100% right.
I was wrong, Fred.
The game played out exactly as I expected, except the Patriots defense made the plays. I didn't expect them to.
Well, then it didn't play out.
It was
a
shootout that was close in the fourth quarter.
So you were
right.
Wrong.
Fred? Right.
Fred? You can't even admit
right.
You're wrong when
it was
you picked 20 the other
to 14
team
Fred, I was
before
wrong.
They
pooped
Thank
themselves.
Thank you, Paul. Paul is a man.
I was wrong.
You are a baby.
I am
a
right.
A baby with a big head and T-Rex arms.
And right.
I didn't see, I didn't think they would do it again. They, there was 4 turnovers in San Diego. I didn't think they would
that's
force
who they are.
Certainly against the Patriots, that's who they are.
And against
that's
really
four
any
more,
good
that's
teams.
That's 4 more turnovers.
Why they can't win in the playoffs? They self-destruct.
North turnovers team.
Yeah.
That was an accident, a typo that I decided to
they
leave in
They seem to beat everybody else. They just
somebody else used it. Somebody else wrote
it. But not in the postseason, Paul.
They beat the Colts every time they play them in the postseason.
Well, maybe they happen to match up with that team, but, they get against a team that plays decent defense and, they self-destruct.
That didn't happen this week. They played against a team that's been playing terrible defense and still
self-destruct. If you don't let Rivers go down in 3-4 plays, he's going to make, the team's going to make a mistake.
Well, Rivers is not a mistake-prone quarterback.
No, the team is going to make a mistake.
He's got an NFL record without a game with 3 picks.
He's very good.
Yeah,
I like, people.
That hurts, Paul. That was in his must-stop last year.
somebody in the blog said that he's overrated. No way. He's not overrated.
I think I said, did you remember
The guy throws the ball a little funny, but he's not overrated.
He threw some bad passes the other day because he could have had two or three more completions of 25-plus yards that he just missed the throws.
Yeah, he did.
But everybody does.
Right. Let's see. Who is this? I don't know. He says,
he's now answering himself.
For 2 weeks now, I've been listening to the media pounding McCourty for his play so far this year. Brandon Marshall and Vincent Jackson, those were his assignments. Both tough physical receivers who are near impossible to contain, much the way G-Force and Hernandez are. Will he continue to get targeted? Yes, because he will be the guy we send over there to defend their best. Does he need to do better and pull out of a bit of a sophomore slump? Yes. Do we have enough strength in our pass defense to give him help every team needs against that level of receiver? No. Only rhetorical questions in a series of statements. One final one, F the Jets. So I kind of don't know what Ross, this is Ross, what he was saying.
So his hopes weren't as high for Devin McCourty as mine were, apparently. Because I thought he was developing into top four,
yeah,
five corner.
You want
corner.
Him to turn, if you know, he's not Revis, but if Revis was on Vincent Jackson, he wouldn't have had that type
right.
of day.
Do you remember the Revis chart
but
from
the best.
Not last year, but 2 years ago?
Yeah,
it was Moss, one catch.
I know.
Andre Johnson, one catch.
You.
It was literally the who's who of every great receiver. He's a great corner going against a great receiver, and he still performed well.
And
it didn't work.
There's a difference between two catches for 24 yards that Revis would have allowed and 10 for 178. Or whatever
Vincent
it was.
Vincent Jackson did what he'd never done against any corner. He had a career day against what's supposed to be best corner.
I mean, what do you think? I mean, how good is Antonio Gates? Do you think?
Well, he's not the guy he used to be, but
he's pretty good.
Do
you think
good.
He's a freak?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think he's a great player. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a freak. And you were able to, you know, pay some special attention to him and limit him. So why couldn't they do the same thing with, you know?
Well, you just can't do everything.
But I just don't like this notion. Well, it was Brandon Marshall and it was Vincent Jackson.
No, I know. But
last year, they completely shut Brandon Marshall down.
There's a cause and effect.
In that Monday night game in Miami.
You could have done what you just wanted to do. No. They could have shut down. Then Gates would have killed
them. I would rather have that happen.
Rex Ryan bases his defense on... Okay, Darrell Revis will do this.
I know he's going to do that.
He uses one of those little pharmacist things, pushes that matchup to the side,
right.
And everything else. I thought Belichick might develop into being able to do that with McCourty. So far, there is less than zero chance of that happening right now.
That's my point. It's not you needed to game plan to take Vincent Jackson out of the game. I'm saying you should have been comfortable that wasn't going to happen with your Pro Bowl cornerback on him. And it happened 2 weeks in a row. And that to me is concerning. And it's more concerning even so that opponents seem to think that that's the matchup they want to try to exploit with 15 targets each week, right? 15 this week too?
I believe so.
For Jackson? I mean, I'm not saying that he was on Jackson every play. I'm sure he wasn't. But
a lot.
They're going after him an awful lot. That's telling me that the other team thinks they can exploit him.
Plus, maybe I'm wrong here, but... If I asked experts to put together their top five receivers in the NFL, I don't think either of those two guys would be in the mix, right? So we're talking about...
Vincent Jackson absolutely would not be.
Mid-level receivers. Good receivers, don't get me wrong. Very good, very physically gifted, but not Andre Johnson, not Calvin Johnson, not Roddy White or whoever. And if they're, say, the 10th best receiver in the league, I was hoping McCourty would be in the range of... 6, 7, 8, 10 best corner in the league.
Well, those guys can be classified as, you know, the matchup headaches for most teams. You know, the big physical receiver. Those have always been
right.
coveted in the draft when you can get those tall receivers that actually are good receivers.
Right.
You know, they're matchup headaches. Yes, we hope McCourty would develop into the guy that regardless would be able to match up with these guys and hold his own.
And he's having what I feared. Remember I wrote at one point that everybody says the year two jump, you make your biggest jump in, but if you were great in year one, is it harder to make the year two jump? Is there more a book out there? Do you become a target? Is there a bullseye? And if those guys aren't ready, for example, the tight ends clearly have shown so far they're ready. They were great as rookies, and they've been even better as sophomores.
In fact, better.
McCourty has not done the same thing.
Yeah.
No, and that's a concern.
It's fair to say at this point.
And again, maybe too harsh to say Well, you got to shut down Brandon Marshall, and you got to shut. You can allow five catches.
I said hold his own.
You know, five or six catches for 60 or 70 yards.
He's been left holding his own.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Five or six catches, 60, 70 yards or whatever. You know, good plays. Hey, you're not going to shut him down. That's like what Bill's answer to me about Gates. Well, you know, you got to hold on there. And
you did.
The only thing is, you shut him out. Did you hear me say that, by the way? Fred.
Right. No, I didn't.
You said it really quiet, though.
What did you do to take away Gates? And he goes, well, you can't take him away. You're just holding on up there. I go, well, you did.
But I was like 5 feet from him, and I didn't hear him, so he didn't want to pick a fight with him.
Up on my recorder.
Let's go to the.
Yeah, your recorder's right in front of your mouth.
Let's go to the.
So is the microphone. When I'm talking.
Microphone.
The guy who holds the microphone.
Yeah, but not after you're done with your question.
Did you see what Bill did to the microphone yesterday? He absolutely mauled the microphone when he got to the podium yesterday.
He does
everything. He always pulls it down, but this time
he always pulls it down and then back up.
But really, he mauled it yesterday.
Probably
should like mad at it.
No, you shouldn't. But
bam, I got it.
They were setting it up when we got there. I go, I don't know why you're wasting your time. He's going to put it down by his nipple.
And I know they got this new little video.
Yeah. Was this yesterday or are you talking about post game?
Yesterday. They have this new little video. They call them microphone flags. And the little flag has a screen on it that can show advertisers that Bill just took it and just like destroyed it.
Total side note, but if you notice that flag is like when I buy some new piece of digital equipment, I don't think they've peeled the little film off yet.
Oh, is that right?
I think it's still on there. Because I noticed it's not overly bright when you
watch
it on TV.
Well, no, it's only good when you're really close up.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think part of it might be it's being...
Kevin has something to
peel the film off.
Paul can ask his officiating questions today at 1 p.m. to Mike Pereira on Fox Sports. He's hosting a chat.
Yeah.
So in case you want to log on to that, Paul.
I shan't be logging on to that, but I will be here on PFW in Progress.
I wish somebody would answer why they reviewed the PAT. I know Bill said he had no answer, and they're left looking as dumb as everyone else.
It was because they thought San Diego had too many men on the field.
But is that reviewable?
That's
well, it's a scoring play, so yeah, it's automatically reviewed. Yeah,
that's what I heard from the chain gang. So.
All right. I would think it would be interesting. You know, you're not allowed to talk to refs except rare times they have a pool reporter would come in. Why not? Why not have the refs have to talk to reporters?
Because you don't want them
game?
Talking. I learned that up in the press box this year when the guy didn't know the rule.
Well,
I think that's part of it.
You don't want, I wouldn't let them talk if I were in charge. No way. Hell no.
All right. Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. Olivier is on the phone from Virginia. Hey, Olivier.
How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Thank you, Andy. I love your little French word
Thank you. Thank you.
Wow.
I love to be wrong. I called the pregame social on Sunday, and Andy and I were kind of concerned about our defense. I'm super happy we won, and I was in the middle of a bunch of Charger fans that after the game looked like a bunch of decharged Duracell batteries. I'm happy about that. But I have two questions for you. One is defensive, and the other one is offensive. When I look at our defense and when I look at the safeties, like Rosie Balling that got injured, so I'm not sure who's going to replace him right now. And then I look at McCourty, and I know he's trying his best, and he's maybe a work in progress. But when they put heavy receivers, he looks like a feather against Panzer tanks. And I'm not sure if he can do a better job or if we can help him do a better job. And I'm really concerned about how we keep the receivers from being very lethal against us. And then the other question is on the offense. Now that Hernandez is hurt, does it mean that Signore 85 is going to have more time play, or is he gonna you know work harder or be targeted more by Brady? What do you guys think?
Both good questions, Olivier. Thanks for the call. You know, on the
I don't think he has to work harder. Let's. Yeah. I mean, he may get more chances, and that could go. Well, or that could go very poorly, but I think he's working hard. I still don't buy that whole he's not trying.
No. First of all, his question as far as McCourty goes, you know, the good news is that not every team has a Phillip Rivers and a Vincent Jackson. And I think that, you know, over the course of the season, I think he's going to end up winning more one-on-ones than he loses.
Yeah, but I don't want to wish for him to get a matchup. Sweet, he doesn't have a good receiver this week, so he's playing well. No, he's not.
Yeah, that's part of it. And number one, I also think that most teams have a Vincent Jackson. That not all teams have a Phillip Rivers.
Right, that combination. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, both. Yeah. But I think he's going to go against good receivers and bad quarterbacks like he did on opening night, and he lost.
I don't think he was as... he didn't lose as many as in that night that he did Sunday, did he?
I disagree, but
it was pretty close.
Well, who on that team had the yardage that Vincent Jackson had?
He had 136 instead of 178.
That's better. web radio at Patriots.com.
This is like when he yelled at me for saying San Diego rushed for 100 yards and they only had 98.
Is the email address?
What do you think on that? The offense question in terms of who do you think will fill in? Who are we going to see more of?
You know, that's a good question. And when you guys were talking about it earlier, I don't think you're going to replace Hernandez one. You know, they're not going to put in a guy that does what Hernandez does.
Right.
But I like the fact that, you know, you got two guys in Edelman and Price who has potential. And we're excited to see, you know, what they can do if given the opportunity.
Is it a really bad sign if we see Taylor Price get a lot of run or Julian Edelman get a lot of run this week and Ocho still gets, you know, just his 10 snaps or whatever it is and is still kind of just a guy that comes in?
It's a bad sign in the fact that they don't trust Ocho to be adaptable. Because without Hernandez, the offense is going to have to adapt a little. You know, they're going to have to do some things a little bit differently. And, you know, now that subtle change could be enough to throw Ocho off the track that he's been on to get where he is now.
So you need
a guy like Price or Edelman who've been in the system a little longer.
So let's take it a step further and make it more of sort of a big picture question. And you, Paul, made a comment on one of our many, many appearances that we do everywhere that you can't hold his hand anymore. We're in the regular season. It's game week, blah, 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 which I on some level agree with. And on some level,
you can't wait for him anymore.
But if assuming their game plan came off as they expected it the last 2 weeks, Ocho was not a big part of it, which means he likely wasn't a big part of it on the practice field when the first group gets 75% of the reps. So now the guy who doesn't know the playbook after getting all the reps in the preseason isn't getting reps. Well, how does he learn the playbook if he's not getting reps?
I know.
How do you give him reps if he doesn't know the playbook?
It is one of those catch-22s.
Right.
Right.
So I really think you need to hope as a Patriots fan long-term you see a lot of Ocho this week. In practice, taking some reps in practice, and then on the field because they're comfortable him taking some of the Hernandez load.
I will say, you know, speaking of Ocho, I forgot to bring this up at the top of the show, but Tom Brady did his interview with Dennis and Callahan yesterday morning, and he came out very strong against Brewski.
And Harrison.
And Harrison about these guys do not know what's going on in this locker room, and I love them, but they don't know what's going on. And I like that he said that. You know, and I think that Ocho probably appreciated that too.
I'm sure.
But I think your comment about the adaptability, how it would be a bad thing because it would show that they don't feel like he's adaptable. That's a good point. It's kind of like 20 minutes ago or so when I said to you that I'm not sure that that's Taylor Price's thing when you said maybe it's a chance for your boy to get. And that's kind of how I feel is I think that right now, from all we're hearing about Taylor Price, the problem is getting him up to speed after being in such an archaic offense in college. You know, he had the short offseason last year with the weird rules. And then this year, you know, they're just trying to get him up to speed on everything he has to do. He's been outside. So now all of a sudden, 2 weeks into the season, he hasn't played yet. And you're going to say, well, I know you've been outside, but we're going to need you to do some of these things that Aaron Hernandez does. I'm not sure that's in his best interest either. And as you said, with Ocho Cinco, if they don't do it with him, then it's probably a similar kind of situation where they say, well, he's got all he can handle to learn what he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
Do we really want to put anything different on his plate? Not necessarily more, but different.
Right.
Which Branch said post-game last year, he, instead of being able to play the X, the Y, the F, which he can do now after having a full camp, last year it was just playing catch-up each week, and he could only play the one position.
So having said all that, I'll play a little B-low, down-low, and if you've got Edelman on your fantasy bench, you might want to activate him. This game because he might be the guy that
see here's where I would be. This is why they hate me. I would say, why do you have Edelman on your fantasy team?
Well, you got on the bench. He's a backup, but now you activate him for this game because
he's a way backup.
Yeah, but you should have backups on your team that start for their team.
I don't know from fantasy. Okay, I don't know how it works.
I don't play
the damn game. Okay,
I don't know from fantasy. I do think Edelman's the guy, though, because I think that's the stuff that he does.
Right.
That'll be thoroughly disappointing to me.
All right, well.
What happened to your special thing? He's special. Only as a returner?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Hey, was Sam Bradford special last night?
Yeah. He's surrounded by poop.
I think he gets too excited.
He's surrounded by... Would you get excited if you had poop around you?
Well, no, but I think he's like... He needs to calm down a little bit.
He's in his second year.
Okay.
What did Peyton Manning look like in his first 2 years?
If I'm sitting with Sam and
is
I have
Peyton
to give
Manning
him advice...
special?
The first thing I'm going to say to Sam
his
Bradford
second year,
is
was pretty
calm
good.
Down. That's what I'm going to
Bradford was pretty good his first year. And he's going to be pretty good his second year if anybody can make a play for him. He has to carry
Bradford
the whole
average
Rams
like
team.
The lowest yards per attempt in the league.
And where did he
year.
Go?
Oh, can you pour me a drink?
Sure, please? Freddie. You got a cup?
On the rocks.
Top shelf.
That would be good if we could.
Did you see Quinn had a sack? I didn't see it.
Have drinks while we have the show.
Yes, Quinn.
Lube up.
You see, Quinn
what?
Had a sack. Quinning.
Quinn had a sack.
You know, I also part of that.
Garbage time?
It's more than, I have no idea.
Was there garbage time in that game? I didn't see
the whole game was pretty
play.
Much garbage time.
Really?
Both teams didn't look
terrible.
Good.
Dropped punts, dropped kickoffs.
Yeah, for
I told
a while,
you there was the backward pass
it.
That they just picked up and Cadillac Williams had no interest in. The line, you know, key downs, their left tackle, they had it was like a third and short in a drive. He just false start, your left tackle.
Right.
You can't do that when you're not a very good football team. You can't make all those stupid, lazy mistakes.
Giants, you know, although the Giants still have that pass rush even with the injuries. They are good up front.
And you know what I really like? This is a totally lame thing. The guy's face mask, who it's
oh,
all
it's
the
like
bars.
All the grids?
Yeah.
I saw that. It looks like Hannibal Lecter.
Really, really, really like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I noticed
it's
that,
pretty
too.
Pretty badass.
Like, wow, that's pretty cool.
I don't remember who it was. It wasn't one of the big-name guys.
No.
It was the next tier.
Yeah.
It wasn't Tuck. It wasn't...
No.
What's his name?
I don't know.
Pierre-Paul
Thomas?
No, it's Juan Pierre-Paul.
Is it?
No, it's Jason, but I call
who?
Him Juan.
What? Max from New Hampshire. Hey, guys, while the Patriots have brought in some upgrades for the D-line, it just seems that they still aren't willing to commit to stunting and blitzing on a consistent basis. I don't really understand, because if the fear is giving up big plays in the secondary, well, they already gave up 400 yards at a game. What do you think? You know, there was one play where I think Haynesworth stunted, and it took forever.
I'm starting to go down the Paul Perillo road. If he is, how did you call him? Irrelevant or useless?
Not useless.
No.
Irrelevant. I didn't say useless.
Sorry.
Yeah. Here's a guy.
Well, we're 2 weeks into this, the most dominating defender ever.
We talked about Mayo having a better game in game two. I actually think in the limited time that he had in Miami, Haynesworth was more effective in game one than he was in game two.
Because he was playing Jags.
You know?
I don't think he had much of an impact on either game. He did have, I would agree with Fred, he had more of an impact against Miami because he drew two holding calls.
And he was playing a Pop Warner offensive line.
Gene in Daytona Beach, I heard rumors that Aaron Hernandez could be out from anywhere from 1 to 4 weeks.
Six.
He has become a key go-to guy for Tom. How do you think Belichick will handle it? Well, we've been talking about it. If Aaron is out 4 weeks, do you think Belichick might make a roster move, say bringing up Garrett Mills from practice squad to fill in?
Yeah.
If Aaron is out only 1 week, will Belichick just shift players around already on the 53-man roster and alter the offense to their skills and still be effective? What are your thoughts on this? Thanks to all you guys for all you do for us spoiled Patriots fans, especially this offseason, keeping the flame alive. No other team's fans have it so good.
Better believe
it. Well, thanks, Gene. Last year...
I wouldn't rule that Garrett Mills thing out. Unless it's strictly... in the early reports were 1 or 2 games. If that's what it is, I would rule the Mills thing out. But if it turns out to be 6 games, 5 or 6 games, I wouldn't rule it out.
I would.
I wouldn't rule it out. I didn't say I had interest.
I don't think you will.
Well, last year, Hernandez was a little banged up. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there for the whole season. Do we remember what the offense looked like when he wasn't in the lineup?
Well, a lot of people point to his absence, and even though he played in the game, in the playoffs.
Right.
Because they say he was not fully healthy, and that was a big...
Well, he had surgery afterwards, so...
Yeah. But a lot of people point to that as a reason offensively. That's, like Bill likes to say, that's a question for Bill. Only Bill knows what he could and couldn't do in terms of the game plan because of his being less than 100%. He was less than 100%. That is unquestioned.
Freddie,
he had surgery right after the season.
I've developed a little theory on the conflicting reports of 1 to 2 weeks and 4 to 6 weeks. I think probably there's a chance. Well, he finished the game on a sprained MCL.
I think I know where
you're
going.
You can do what you want to do. I mean, it's not ideal. You can do worse damage, but wearing a brace, even you're protected. You think there's a chance that he returns for the Jets game, which is 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away.
3 weeks away.
And then misses some more time. There's Dallas in the bye, I think. So total, it's kind of a 6-week recovery, But you have a big game in there that he returns for along the way, so kind of both reports could be right.
I've played that little game with people in the past, and I've always been wrong. Oh, they'll bring him in for this game, and I've never been right doing that.
Oh, if you ever ask Bill about it, you'll get scoffed at.
Right.
Oh. I don't
never admit that.
I don't doubt that he has that in mind at times.
I had the audacity to ask if the offense was clicking better than he expected without a full offseason.
You got to imagine that they're looking ahead to that Jets game and saying, you know, physically, how can we be sure that we're at our best for
and
that
that's
game?
Why I wonder if maybe these two reporters got some, well, it's really a 6-week injury, and then the other one said, we're hoping to have him back in a week or two.
Well, let me ask you this, too, Andy, being more astute with the knee problems that you went through. And I didn't read any of the reports, only the headlines of the time frames. But did any of them talk about any potential for surgery?
Oh, no.
That was my first thought was 1 to 2 weeks. They're expecting him to give it some rest. He'll be okay. He can play. 4 to 6, to me, sprained MCL, you have that quick scope. That's 4 to 6 weeks. So I was kind of wondering, maybe someone told one guy he's going to get a quick scope, miss a few games, miss a month, and then come back.
I don't think
that's why I was wondering what it said in the stories.
I don't think I didn't see any of that, and MCL is not really a surgical thing, a scope or anything.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking. I'm asking
more
the knee
cartilage.
It's a sprain.
Yeah, it's a sprain.
But a sprain is like a partial tear, isn't it? That's what it is.
Every sprain is tiny tears. Is like
right, but
fibrous
you can't really
whatever.
Fix it, can you?
Well, no. Well, the MCL, they don't fix at all, really.
Right.
They just let it heal.
Right.
Except for Brady, who tried to fix his and almost lost
his leg.
And like
you said, you can make it worse.
Well, I don't know if you can make it worse, but it regenerates itself just like an ankle is partial tears of all the ligaments when you sprain your ankle. You have to get off it.
That's how I always understood it.
Now, they can fix it later in the ankle. If it gets really bad, they somehow overlap it and tighten things back up. But the MCL is just, for the most part, they just let it heal.
Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Anthony's in Naples. Hey, Anthony.
What's going on, guys?
Oh, you know, we're basking in the glow of another Patriots victory.
Dominating defense.
Yeah, I'm calling to defend, and I'm also calling to throw a crazy idea out there. So I got two things. First, I'll defend because I'm sick and tired. And listen, it's not directed at you guys. I'm just, you know, I get a little angry with just everybody. But I don't understand what people expect out of McCourty. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like because Darrell Revis is in the division, they expect, oh, this is our answer to Darrell Revis. We have the equal to him. And it's just like, he's in his second year. Calm down. You know what? He's going to get thrown on. For Christ's sakes, he had Marshall the first week, all right? And then he had Jackson the second week. Those are pretty damn good receivers. I don't understand what people think. And you know what people forget about, too? You have to realize, like, especially towards the end of the game, everybody looks at the bad at McCourty. But you know what? There was coverage downfield because Rivers kept dumping it off with all those dump-offs to the running back, to Tolbert. I think his name is Tolbert, right?
Yes.
Okay? And you know what? It's the whole freaking league. There was how many games that were over 300 yards? So if you really think about it, the Patriots are right there in the middle of the pack, as in with passing yards. It's a different league this day. It just it drives me bonkers. They expect Darrell Revis out there, but you know what? Give the kid a freaking break. And my question is, too.
I guess I just overrated him then. I thought he was an all-pro. I thought he was one of the five or six best cornerbacks in football. Maybe I was wrong.
Okay, but you know what? They get thrown on too, Paul.
No, I understand that, but I'm expecting him to be better than allowing
career
over 100 yards in receiving to the guy he's covering.
But you
That's
know,
all.
You know, and the thing that aggravates me, too, is that I wish I could see the whole field. You know what I mean? I only go by what I hear and what I see, and pretty much all I see is a seven. You know, the front seven on either side.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't know, like, were they rolling the coverage over to the other side and giving Dowling help, and he was left out there one-on-one? And you know what? When you have the time and the opportunity because your pass rush doesn't get there, hey, nobody can cover the guy forever.
I'll give you that one. The pass rush has been just as bad as it was last year, and quarterbacks have had a lot of time to throw. I think that is a factor, and I think if that doesn't improve, I don't think you're going to see the coverage improve a whole lot. Well, that one I'm with you on, Anthony.
Yeah, it's just like, calm down, everybody. It's just like, they think this is a total bust with McCourty. Give the freaking kid a break.
I don't think people think he's a total bust.
Not a total bust.
I think people are surprised.
Way too much criticism.
Yeah, I just think people are surprised that he hasn't played to the level he played last year. That's all. I don't think anybody says he's a bust.
Well, you know what? I listen to a lot of Felger, so you know what I mean? The world's coming to an end with him, so I'm sorry. Like I said, don't take it personal, guys. I'm just, this is a generalization.
So what's your right? What's your wild, wacky theory?
Well, my wild and wacky theory is, like, okay, now I'm going to sound like Homer Fan and just like, you know.
Now?
What was the first part?
That last rant?
Even Fred was nodding his head in disgust at the last rant.
No, I wasn't. What? Okay, let's go, Homer. What do you got?
I'm critical. I feel like I'm critical of them, but I just like, you know, I'm hearing it from every media outlet. It's just like, oh, McCourty, McCourty. Like, calm down. Good Lord. It's just like, you know, like I said, the world's coming to an end. But anyways, and you know what aggravates me is everybody expects Darrell Revis, and what aggravates me about Darrell Revis is that nobody ever throws on that fool. You know, they have way too much respect for him.
Because you know when what? You do, it goes back the other way. That's why people don't throw on him. They threw the ball at him, what, 3 times in that Sunday night game? And the game's on the line was one of the times that Romo decided to do it. Bang.
Well, there you
pick.
Go. Don't say it was because of him. Romo was the dope that threw it to him underneath. Romo was the one at fault. That wasn't because of coverage, that interception. It was because it was a dope play by Romo. Don't give me that. And if he was healthy,
you're right. He stinks too. Go ahead. What's your rant?
Stink, but you know what?
I'm tired of this. What's your rant?
But anyways, this is towards the Jets. I hate to look ahead. But you know, why doesn't Bill O'Brien maybe, like, come up with a little bit of a scheme, right? You know how they, like, funneled him? What's that? What's so funny?
I don't know. You got Paul rolling around in his seat over there, laughter.
I'm just laughing because I started the show by saying, what we're seeing on offense is truly historic. An hour and 15 minutes later, we're saying, why doesn't Bill O'Brien come up with schemes?
Well, I'm
at a loss.
Well, you know what? I look at it as fool's goal, like what's his name said, with Bill O'Brien. You know, when the game plan is going like he planned it during the week, everything is fine. But you know what? He's awful at making adjustments, and that was proof last year. And you know what? I still look at him with suspect. I'm sorry. He's
okay.
Got to prove to me in the playoffs.
Listen, that's fair. I disagree with you, but it's fair to have an opinion on anybody you want. I find it funny that the guy who allowed the guy he was covering to get 178 and 136 yards is okay, and the guy who led the offense to 38 and 35 points and the quarterback is thrown for 940 yards is suspect.
Well, he's suspect.
That's a little odd to me.
Because nobody has stopped the offense initially so that he can make adjustments on the fly.
But why doesn't he get credit for that? I don't understand. Well, he's not that good because teams don't stop him right away?
Anthony, what's the example?
They stopped him in the third quarter, and he responded to that in the fourth quarter.
Are you talking about the Jets game last year and the Baltimore game the year before? Is that what you're talking about?
He takes way too long. And you know why?
But no, are those the two examples that you're referring to?
Those are the two examples. And among other things, you know why? I don't respect the fact that Bill needed an extra year to make sure he was going to give him the offensive coordinator spot. To me, in my mind, I don't respect that. There was a reason why Josh McDaniels got it right away after one year.
He didn't get it right away. He did not get it right away.
He got it after 1 year, where Bill O'Brien, it took him 2 years in order to get that spot. That's what I have a problem with. You know what I mean? What wasn't he doing right?
I think, Anthony, you're being real nitpicky about Bill O'Brien. I think that if he wasn't capable, A, he wouldn't have gotten it at any time, 2 years, 3 years, and B, you know, Tom Brady wouldn't have allowed it. If, you know, it's not, I know it's Bill's call, but Brady weighs in on that. And
all I'm saying is I'm waiting until the playoffs and see what he does against the playoff caliber defense.
Okay.
And how he adjusts. That's all I'm saying. Right now, during this regular season, it's almost like a sit and wait. It's like, all right, we're just waiting for playoffs. We can't get too excited. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That's how I feel.
I hear you. Okay. Anthony in Naples. Questioning.
Thanks, Anthony.
Boy, to me, that's real nitpicky.
I agree.
We got to save that for John Rook.
Yeah, and I do like the back and forth that we always have with Anthony. But I mean, really, offensively, to me, in 2 weeks, you really dig in deep. It's like I said last week with the 99-yard touchdown pass. Like, I'd like to see them grind the clock out, and thankfully, they did that for me this week. I was looking for the 4-minute offense, Freddie, and they gave it to me this week.
Yeah, and you can read all about it on Take Tuesday on Patriots.com, a new weekly what do you call it? Sticky content
yeah.
piece that we're putting, not that kind, strippers, that we're putting on Patriots.com, where we'll take a look back at maybe something that was a little overlooked in the coverage right after the game, or something that we have a new perspective on a day and a half later.
Right.
And we looked at the 4-minute drive this week. Technically, it was whatever it was, 3 minutes and change, and it finished up with a 16-yard Ben Jarvis Green Ellis touchdown. But, you know, the Patriots wanted to run the ball, wanted to run the clock out with the lead there. They got the job done. Very impressive.
And speaking of that, you know, one of the things we haven't really mentioned, and I guess it's a good thing, because when you do, it's usually because they didn't do that very good job, is the offensive line.
Sure.
Vollmer came back. Solder was used primarily as an eligible receiver.
As I predicted.
But I think they did pretty damn well. Copen out, Connolly, did you see any bad snaps? No.
I don't even worry about Connolly anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, the offensive line, I think, really did a pretty good job. I think there might have been a holding call on Matt Light, which I thought was very questionable. He had his hands inside the shoulders. They still called him for grabbing onto the shirt. But I thought overall they ran well when they wanted to, and I think, offensive line deserved, you know, an A-.
There were some of those plays where Brady had, like, seemed like 20 seconds he was back there, kind of just shuffling left.
Well, yeah,
it was funny because I thought there was, like, really very little in between. He either had a ridiculous amount of time or he was under the gun a little bit. And there didn't seem like to be a lot of, like, regular drops, you know, bounce on that back foot, throw the ball, and that was that. I mean, it was, you know, they either had some pressure and he had to avoid it or he got sacked. He got sacked a couple times in that game. Or he had three or four plays that was just obscene how much time
right.
he had.
And he ended up getting only like 6 yards on it because
well,
they
no,
had
he had
coverage.
one play that he was there forever, and he ended up completing a pass to Branch for a long game.
That, yeah, I remember that one, but there was another one where I said, boy, that was an awful long time for 6 yards. let's see.
Fans not happy with Anthony, by the way. I'm getting a lot of hits on the Twitter.
Justin in Alaska says, on defense... Defense is only in week two. We need not get worried yet, unlike the Sox. Panic, panic. I don't believe we need to defend them yet. The defense is geared towards allowing up to, but not over, 24 points a game. And it should make you take time off the clock to do so. Much like in 04, I believe they will have a couple good games because the other team will be quickly behind. But overall, this won't be a force, our defense in 11. Do you agree? Well, we might have to, but we were hoping it would be.
Yeah, I agree.
That was kind of what we were hoping for when we saw these changes, that they would start to dictate rather than kind of react.
Yeah, I mean, 0-4 was a dominant defense. This isn't that, I agree. But I think 24 points is a lot of points. And
yeah,
certainly,
why are we circling a big number and saying, this is our target?
I think we're sort of... distorted.
It'll take them time to put up 24 points.
I think we're distorted a little bit by our own offense.
Yeah.
Because we never, you know, are in the 20s anymore. What's it, 10 in a row?
Right.
30 or more. Of course, you know, excluding the game that they didn't score 30, much like the winning streak that we're on currently at home.
I know. Jan Brady says, Justin, the Belichick special was great. One part that really stood out to me was when Belichick was telling Tom to calm down in that he's missing on throws. Tom Brady turned into Jan Brady and started to provide excuses in a voice that, I don't know, didn't get him Giselle. It was very un-Brady-like. Anyone catch that? Yeah, we all did.
Oh, we caught it.
Yeah. Black and white. Nate Burleson, he's titling all his little thoughts.
His little notes.
Black and white. Nate Burleson said that he wants to be the black Wes Welker this year. This means giving up several inches in several departments. Oh, upon seeing this
Nate Burleson said that? That's a quote?
He said he's the white Wes Welker.
No, but did he say the next sentence?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's commentary by Justin.
Oh. Okay.
Upon seeing this interview, Kenny Walter tweeted that he wanted to be the white Zoltan Mesko.
I'm a little disappointed we haven't gotten an email from
Walter. Andy predicted that as soon as Mesko went down. We can look for a solid Ken Walter email on Tuesday.
In Expletive Island, did you see the show that had Revis mic'd up against Dez Bryant? Filled with language, there was so much bleeping, I wasn't sure if the program was supposed to be in Morse code or if my old dial-up modem was trying to connect to AOL.
Ba-dum-bum.
So, Justin, there's a lot of dirty talk out there.
Dirty talk.
Like, have dirty we not talk. Talked about the documentary? Was that last Thursday and is today's Tuesday? And
no, I thought Tuesday it aired. We talked about it, didn't we?
It aired last week, Thursday.
I don't think we talked about
it.
It was after
the
15th, we were on the air.
Right? It was Thursday.
We haven't talked about it. Talk about it.
I mean, I thought it was great.
Me too.
You didn't like it.
Andy didn't like it.
No, I thought
it was good. Fred thought it was great. Andy didn't like it.
Left something to be desired.
So we sort of covered the gamut.
You know, I thought that the actual content was good. You know, it gave you a lot of stuff that you never would have gotten otherwise and stuff you'd never seen before. But I also looked at it from an artistic standpoint. I just thought the writing was great, the music was great, the editing. And people think that films was here the whole season. They weren't here as much as you might have thought. They really had to make the most of the time while they were here. And I think the editors did a great job in, you know, piecing together what they did have.
What do you mean by that? I'm not aware of that.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
It's like they weren't in on every team meeting. They weren't here.
They were in on any team meeting they wanted to be in.
No.
That's what Kenny Rogers said, the guy who produced it.
I think he goes by Ken.
Yeah, they weren't here the whole, every week.
When to hold them.
They weren't here every week.
Because for every meeting.
But
they didn't go to London.
They didn't go to London, no.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, that costs money.
See, it's not so much that they didn't have stuff on every game because I don't think it was a chronicle of the season. It was supposed to be. It was a life of Belichick. But the way they put it together, it was noticeable how they left out certain things. And it's not about negative positive. I just felt like there were things that you need. Like, I don't think there was anything negative about the Richard Seymour trade. Because it doesn't matter what you think of the trade. To me, this is a profile of Bill Belichick, right? It's a football life. Bill Belichick. Don't you think it's interesting to hear what the football coach thinks of a major trade? It's not negative or positive. I want to hear, you know, how did that come about? Did he talk to Robert about it?
It's a joke.
That element was a joke.
Right.
The fact that you don't have anything about the Richard Seymour trade
and
it's not chronicling the 2009 season, but that happened during the time frame that they were filming this. And I think to get his reaction to that, to me, that's vital. He's not only the head coach, he's the general manager. You need to get the mindset of Bill Belichick on that trade and that they dropped the ball on it. And
well, they may not have been here when the trade was made. You know, it wasn't like an interview afterwards.
Where are you getting this stuff about what they were here for and what they weren't?
They didn't have their cameras here for every moment. They probably weren't even on
about
site
for every moment.
The weekend that it was traded, they weren't here.
Final cutdowns weekend wouldn't be an interesting weekend.
I just can't imagine that they weren't there for that.
They weren't.
Yeah, Paul keeps saying it wasn't about the 2009 season. That's, to me, part of the reason
But I'm saying
I thought it was very much a chronicle blow-by-blow of the 2009
But that's
season.
What a lot of people who are defending the documentary, that's what a lot of people are saying.
But
it's
then
not supposed to be a
Then they
a
didn't
chronicle.
Watch the documentary because 80% of it was a blow-by-blow of the 2009
To me, it's
season.
All about the coach.
To me, you didn't even need to mention the scores of games and victories if it were a true Belichick thing. You'd use bigger picture coaching, philosophical slants.
That's what I'm looking for.
I thought there was none of that, and which is why I thought it wasn't very good. I thought it just as easily could have been labeled 2009, a season with the Patriots, and had nothing to do with Belichick other than a couple trips to see his mom, his dad's grave, and a mix-in of his kids, which I thought was 10% of the documentary. I thought it wasn't very good. I thought it was a season highlight film.
I thought it gave you an insight into game preparation, a little bit of the looser Bill Belichick, a little bit of his upbringing. You know,
a little bit. Well said. A little bit.
Yeah.
To me, it failed to be a Belichick.
That's the stuff that I was interested in.
Yeah.
I just didn't get enough.
Yeah,
I liked that stuff the most.
I could have eaten up all of it, but I think they had a certain amount of stuff to use to do all those things, and I think they did a great job with what they had.
Well, how about the aftermath of the season, the playoffs?
They weren't here for that.
I know they were here for that because they were in the locker room. They just didn't show Belichick.
Right.
So, like, to me, That's fascinating to me. How does a coach handle that?
Yeah,
and then Bill talks about how much you miss right after that. They sort of wrap it up. How much you miss, you know, how the world passes you by when you're a coach and how just demanding and draining it is, which I found fascinating. But yet they don't tell you, they don't show you how he reacts to that.
But maybe,
the visceral reaction
coming off the field
to me was gold.
But maybe they had that and it wasn't really that good, and so they decided not to use it.
I'm sure they had it.
Yeah, but maybe it just didn't add to the story, and it would have fell flat, or it wasn't what people would expect. You know, what do we, you know, we would, you know, expecting to see some type of emotion and outrage, maybe, but I doubt that that's what happened. It was probably like season's over.
But it's interesting no matter what.
Yeah, see, I think he could have gone in there.
If
and,
you expect
and
him to
looked,
throw Gatorade and he doesn't, that's interesting. It's interesting no matter what he does.
I find it interesting if he goes in there and looks around and says, well, fellas, we had a hell of a year. We'll see you next year. That to me, is that what they do? Is that how they do it? I am not privy to getting behind that curtain. I want to see it.
Right.
And I didn't get to see it.
It was disappointing.
I think they hit a home run with what they had.
I thought it was very good. Andy thought it stunk. You thought it was the best thing you've ever seen.
I believe I said stunk.
I don't understand the whole music and.
I think to me
that's NFL films. They do that.
I notice that stuff. I notice it.
But they do it for
everything. You're a DVD maker yourself.
No, but
do you ever watch those? You know the documentaries, NFL films.
Of course, I do.
They're all the same. They do that
they're
for everybody. They don't do that music and
stuff. They do. They have
the way they shoot them and how they. Well, you know that some ground shot
NFL
of the football
films,
and the football looks like you know the Empire State
Building.
Yeah,
NFL films is all original music. They compose all their own music, which is one of their kind of characteristics that they do that themselves. But I thought they did a great job. I'm sorry.
I liked it. I just wish there was more of the stuff that I think you liked the most about it, which was sort of Bill behind, you know, Bill unfiltered, you know, Bill with his mom. I mean, I never saw anything with his mother.
Right.
I found that interesting. I like
that. Mike in Smithfield, Rhode Island, where the Patriots used to have training camp, says, I can't stream the show on my PC anymore from the new site, but wanted to weigh in on the Pats' defensive concerns I'm sure you're discussing today. A good friend of mine is really concerned with the amount of yards and points we're allowing, but I'm really not worried. From a statistical standpoint, the Pats above the league average in sacks, turnovers, and points allowed. This is a team that was also playing with a lead and was making sure they weren't going to give up the big play, quick scores to allow the Chargers to come back. More than half of Rivers' completions were dump-offs to running backs when the deep balls were covered. If you had told me
only eight
going into the
wasn't
game...
Wasn't the last touchdown like a 30-yard touchdown?
26.
Let the man finish his email, please.
Okay, we'll continue.
If you had told me going into the game that the Chargers would have 7 points entering the fourth quarter, that Antonio Gates would have zero catches, and that the wide receivers would combine for 14 catches all game, I'd be shocked. From an eyeball test, I thought the defense did what they were supposed to do. Sure, they allowed some yards, but all in all, they did what they are known for. They bent, but they didn't break. If you're worried about yards being so important, go root for the Chargers. They led the league in yards on offense and yards allowed on defense last year. How did that work out for them?
Same way it worked out for the Patriots, basically.
Yeah, except for they actually got to say they made the playoffs.
So the defense is fine. No concerns. All right, nothing to see here. Let's move along.
Let's, you know what? If you want to sigh,
Patriots were 14-2 and had a bye.
Right, and won no playoff games.
I understand that, but they both made the playoffs.
Because stats are for losers, no matter which stats you choose to use, just like Bill says.
Oh, my God.
You use the stats 14-2. Well, if you don't win anything, that's for losers.
It's going to be a long season.
Well, if we're going to ignore the facts,
what
it is going to be
say,
a long
Andy?
Season. All right. Go ahead, Andy. Do you have something to say?
I thought you were saying something before Paul interrupted you. No,
he
said the same thing that I said.
Oh.
But wait a minute. Let's break down the email.
What?
They gave up the yards because they had big leads, but you know they're in the top half in sacks. That didn't have anything to do with the fact that they had big leads.
I just like
even though they didn't get anywhere near the quarterback until the last minute of the game.
They were making
week.
Sure the Chargers didn't get big plays, and
they gave up eight.
They pulled within seven on a 26-yard touchdown with 5:40 to play at 28-21.
They allowed eight drives in that. You know, you say. If they had told you they'd only have 7 points going into the fourth quarter, yeah, I'd be thrilled. But if they told you going into the game the Chargers are going to have eight drives of 50 yards or more, would you say they're only going to have 7 points?
Well, they're North turnovers team, so.
Right. I mean, so let's not just ignore the fact that the Chargers self-destructed and the Patriots made plays when they had to.
Self-destructed, good word, too.
Now,
not Tolbert fumble self-destructed.
But again, you know,
isn't
that part of knowing who the Chargers are and how you style your defense?
Listen, I think more
you know,
of
maybe
Bill Belichick
if you take
than you
a high-risk defense against these guys, Rivers burns you.
I think more.
So you don't do that.
I think more of Belichick than to think that was his plan.
They didn't get burned by Rivers?
They gave up a lot of big plays in that game. A lot of them.
But they weren't scoring plays.
Well, okay. Again, if we're going to sit here, this right now through two games, there's a long way to go. There's a long way to go. Would you not say through two games it's eerily similar to last year?
I would say it is similar.
Look, does that concern you at all, or do you just think they're going to get better? I think this defense is going to improve.
Look, here,
I think there's more room to improve this year than last year.
When you think about last year, you're talking about one freaking game that ruined the whole season.
But, Fred, do you think that they
do better in that game that they play the Jets this year than they do? They were 14-2, and they were the number one team
Do you think it's realistic to expect 35-plus points, three straight playoff games to win a title? That's what I'm asking you.
They wouldn't need that.
They will need that.
God.
That's what this team will need.
If they had
based on
the
right
Jets,
now,
they would have played the Steelers.
Okay.
Do you think they would have needed
somebody
that?
Somebody at some point.
How many points did the Jets score?
28 in that game?
Right.
So you needed 35 to win or 31.
In the Jets game.
But
in the
but
Jets
my
game.
Point
the Jets
is,
don't have a great offense.
But I'm not asking you about individual games. I'm asking you going in, do you feel good knowing I got to get to 30 to win three straight playoff games?
I don't
That's
believe
what it's
they
going
to
take.
Do.
They will need that,
no,
Fred. That's what
not.
They will need.
They will not.
All it will take,
will not.
Much like we said last year, all it will take is a team to come in and protect the football.
Did you think that they would only need 22 points to be, or what was it, 22 points to beat the Chargers?
Fred,
no,
did
I
again,
think that? A little more.
Did I think?
Right.
Yeah.
So they did a little better than you
so
thought.
So again,
did.
I'm going to say this.
Right, because they got four turnovers and they dropped the ball.
But that's what they do. That's
all right.
Exactly. It wasn't good enough.
Forget the Chargers. I'm saying in general, it's not a formula for postseason success. In the history of football, according to Kerry Byrne.
Oh, so now you need defense to win in the postseason. I thought, Paul, you said
you
need
some semblance of defense.
Well, I think they showed some semblance.
No, they haven't.
In only giving up 21 points to the Chargers, which had the best offense in the league last year in terms of yards.
And they still
and
have it.
And it's a pretty damn good offense.
But you're missing the point here, Fred. It is a very good offense. It's a very good team. If the other team does not make mistakes, you are in trouble because you can't do anything to stop them.
And I think
and
some
I don't
of those
like,
mistakes were forced by the Patriots.
They absolutely were. The Patriots made good plays on Sunday, and that's why they won the football game. Their defense made a couple of plays, and the other team's defense didn't. That's why you won. I don't like the idea of rolling the dice that the other team is going to make mistakes in the playoffs three straight times to win, because if it doesn't happen, if turnovers are even, I don't think this defense is good enough to win a title.
So last year,
but it's only two games.
Given the team they had last year, if they had gotten past the Jets, I mean,
I don't know who would have beaten them.
The match
somebody
against,
would have because I don't think you're going to win three games in a row that way.
The matchup against the Pittsburgh team is very different than the matchup against the Jets team.
What about the matchup against the Packers?
Right. No, but
forget about
they
the
might
matchup
have lost to the Packers.
What about the Steelers?
They might have
what
lost if, to the Packers.
Could the Steelers beat them in a shootout?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Why not?
No.
Why couldn't the Steelers come in and not turn the ball over like the Jets did?
If you can say no, I can say yes.
I agree with you, Fred. The Patriots offense will score 30 points against Pittsburgh. Why can't Pittsburgh do that? Maybe they'll turn it over like they did Sunday night in that game and get all those sacks and interceptions returned for touchdowns, maybe they won't.
What happened when the Patriots went to Pittsburgh last
I just said that. Maybe they'll turn it over again like they did on that Sunday night in Pittsburgh.
Well, what happened when the Jets came here last year? I mean,
they didn't turn it over. But,
I know.
But 6 weeks earlier, the Jets turned it over five times.
But we can't go out an entire season last year with all these.
I'm just saying.
That all the turnovers that other teams made were just dumb luck.
You're missing my point. No. I'm not saying.
A lot
saying,
of them came from McCourty playing well, and he's not playing well.
You're missing my point totally.
Right? Seven of them?
Let's operate under the premise that every turnover the Patriots caused last year, or had last year, was all 100% due to the Patriots' defense. Let's say that every single one of them, they forced. What happens if they don't force turnovers? That's my
they
concern.
Lose is the
answer. In 2004, you win the game.
9-3. Paul gives
whatever it is. Whatever it is.
Paul gives the most overrated nod in the history of nods. Nod.
Yeah, I had another incorrect nod this week, by the way.
Twice.
Why? Why were you incorrect?
Because I nodded at 17-7 in the middle of the fourth quarter. The other team had the ball down six.
Yeah, but Paul,
my nod was wrong.
As long as you win
the
game.
The nod means
the
game
is right.
The
nod
means
stupid.
The nod means the competitive portion of the game is over.
No.
I was wrong.
No, but the nod to me, the nod means...
I thought the Patriots had the game won at 17-7.
When you nod, if you go and do your yard work and come back, the Patriots will have won the game. Yeah, doesn't matter what happened
in
between.
It means you will not have missed anything.
First of all, it's my nod.
Right. But it means
and that's not what it means.
When you were raking leaves, you didn't miss any competitive game where you said, I wish I was watching
that. That's not how I do it.
That's how I feel about
the nod. Your nod. They're both stupid.
When Paul nods, it means the Patriots will win.
But
no.
I did learn...
The nod means that the game is no longer in doubt.
That he has two different phrasings. When he says... quote, this game is over, that's not the same as the nod. It's different than the nod.
I meant in one play, and you're being an idiot now.
Oh, I thought you were going to swear there.
No, you're being an idiot, but that's what you do. Fred, my only point, you know, I'm listening to Kerry Byrne today of Cold Hard Football Facts, to get back to the guy who says you can't, you know, he makes fun of us about the spreadsheet and all that. Well, let's use the spreadsheet. Let's use the StatGeeks version that I don't like to fall back on because my eyeballs evidently can't tell me. The Patriots right now are 22nd in passer rating, defensive passer rating, 95 and change. There's only one team, I think, or maybe he said two. I think he said one team that has ever had a defensive passer rating over 80 that has won a championship. The Patriots are at 95, not even close to that.
Okay.
So I don't think you can win in the postseason playing this Russian roulette football. At some point, your offense isn't going to get 30, and at some point, you're not going to force four turnovers. Whether you force them or the other team makes them, it's not going to happen at some point. Then what do you do?
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of faith if that happens.
Giovanni in Arizona says Patriots get yet another win because certain players stepped up. Kudos to Chung, Brown, Brady, and the tight ends, and shame on McCourty for getting burned so much, although I'll give him a break because Jackson is 11'6". He's a better corner than he showed on Sunday. The game had some of the absolute worst officiating I've ever seen, and I agree 100% with Andy. No one can play defense anymore. Yeah. The part of the game I was the most impressed with was the end of the first half. Instead of going into the half 17-10 or 17-14, the Pats played situational football and went in 20-7. One more question. Is Buffalo for real? I think our defense will get to Fitzpatrick this week. We'll see. As always, Jets are garbage, and Andy is awesome. So,
do you know who has more touchdowns right now, the Bills or the Patriots?
Probably the Bills. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, because we are assuming that the Patriots with these great offense, but the Bills have more touchdowns.
But in a league that can't play defense anymore.
In a league where defense has been rendered irrelevant.
It's good to have Tom Brady in this offense.
They have 10 touchdowns, so we have 9. I don't know what the points are.
Because they were 41 and 35, and we've scored 38 and 35.
Oh, yeah, it's
right?
Like 5 more points or something.
3 more.
Stripper says a great quote from Phil Simms during the game. The Patriots lead the league in plays where they just make it happen.
See, that's where I needed. That would have been colorful language.
What does that mean?
That's needed to be a road game.
I think that's kind of the point. I have no idea what it means.
Yeah, but we all know when you talk nonstop for an extended period of time, you say stupid things.
I do
think, Freddie, there's a lot more room for growth,
Mark,
on this defense than last year.
Mark,
yeah, there's also a lot more room for the bottom falling out if all these guys are as hurt as they may be.
Yeah.
Mark in Connecticut, seriously, an hour and a half in and you guys are still taking every shot you can against the Patriots.
Not everyone. Let a few go.
And I don't understand how expecting a guy to be great is a shot.
And I also, I think I said at the beginning of the show, I was wrong. I thought San Diego was going to win the game. I didn't think they were going to turn the ball over for it. I thought the Patriots were going to be in trouble on Sunday, and they weren't. They dictated the game.
Chris and Wareham, I don't know if people knew,
but they still dictated the game.
The new version of the iPhone app went live over the weekend, and Chris and Wareham says, my thanks to the people who developed the new iPhone app version for the Patriots. It allows listeners to text, send emails, and check Twitter while still being able to listen to you guys. That was the whole idea.
How come I didn't get a notification?
Maybe you're not on the list.
Oh, he's on the list, all right.
No, how come it didn't pop up in my updates on my app store?
Josh from Waterloo.
Oh, there it is.
Josh from Waterloo is very upset with the fans. He says, was there a mix-up in season tickets that sent the Revs tickets to the Pats and vice versa? Because it seemed like there were only 150 people in the stands. What the hell is he talking about? The greatest player in football stuck his neck out and asked the crowd to get into the game, and they failed horribly. First of all, why does Brady even need to do that? Is it not exciting enough to see greatness perform at a ridiculous level in front of you? Our home fans suck something awful. My wife and I don't even go to home games because it is more exciting to go to a road game. There are better fans that travel. Seattle has consistently had poor teams for years, but their fans cause more false starts than anybody else, and not only do they have an open-air stadium, it is wide open on one end. I don't buy the fact that the stadium doesn't hold the sound. In a crucial third down while we were on defense, they showed the crowd, and 1 in 10 fans were cheering. Why can't these smug morons do their part and give us some home field advantage? Kraft needs to turn over the season ticket holders to get some fresh, excited blood in the stands. Worst fans in the league, says Josh. Wow.
I disagree. It was loud.
I thought it was pretty loud.
It was loud.
I did think it was a better than average crowd.
I'm in the press box. I don't understand the whole, was there 150 people? I mean, it didn't look like I saw any pockets of empty seats.
He meant just from the sound.
Sounded like there was only 150 people cheering.
Oh, I thought he meant that it looked like there were a lot of empty seats on TV, but it didn't seem to me that, in terms of noise, didn't seem any different than any other game, but I'm in the press box, so I'll take Kevin's word.
I thought the halftime thing with Bledsoe, I know
that was as loud as they were the whole game.
Yeah, well, people didn't get to see that on TV, unfortunately, but, you know, he got up there, and I think, you know, as people were cheering, they just kept cheering, and they kept cheering, and that was a nice moment.
I think if he didn't put an end to that, that might have gone on for a long
time.
Yeah,
that was a real nice moment, and
I got a chance to see him after the game, Fred,
for
a quick second.
You said hello?
Yeah, underneath. And I was
check in with more.
I was trying to take a picture, and B-Lo caught me.
Yeah. Let's see. Andy didn't like the Belichick special. Andy doesn't like chocolate either. Enough said.
That's true. Who's that, Brooklyn Matt?
No, somebody else.
Douchebag.
another thing with Brady, by the way, on Dennis and Callahan, you brought him up earlier, Freddie.
Yep.
It's too bad that he felt the need that he had to apologize for that comment.
I know.
Yeah, and he said, I'll never do that again.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and I retweeted that and said, thanks, PC Police. He's already measured and not all that fun, and now he's going to be more measured and less fun.
Right.
Well, that was unfortunate.
It is. On the Ace Ticket Hotline, all the way from France is Umar. Hey, Umar. Hello?
Is it Umar?
Is our transcontinental connection not working?
Hello? Hello? I hear you. Yell louder.
How you doing?
Good.
Good, good.
All right. Hey, I love the show. Hey, I was just calling to say that I'm glad that Brady starts scrambling, you know, and run for yardage now. He almost plays like Roethlisberger.
Well,
yeah,
let's not go overboard.
He did a good job when he would slide a little bit when they had a lot of time to buy even more time.
And the one time, you know, he picked up a few yards running, and I think he needs to do that once in a while because it's going to be there.
Most quarterbacks would have scored on that play.
Well, yeah, exactly. But okay.
I think the same thing happened to Rivers. Most quarterbacks would have scored on that play, too.
Okay, Gomar, what you say?
I'm also worried about our defense, guys. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, secondary really stinks, and I think it's time to sign Darren Sharper. What do you think? He's experienced, and he's really good.
Well, he created a stir yesterday with a tweet about something going on, but then reports were it didn't involve coming here, according to Greg Bedard of the Boston Globe.
Friend of the show.
Oh, so would you guys agree to sign him?
If he's healthy enough, yes.
Well,
that's a big if, though.
They may just need bodies, healthy or not. If anybody who can step on the field with this line of injuries it looks like they could be dealing with in the secondary, their numbers are very, very thin and going to be challenged.
Yeah.
Okay,
Umar, thanks for the call.
I would take him.
How come you didn't chastise him?
If he's healthy enough.
He said the defense stinks worse than a French armpit.
You know how they say that at somewhere in the world you have your double? I think that's the French Paul.
Okay. Oui, oui.
Now, is he fat, too?
He doesn't like Diet Pepsi.
No, I do like
Diet Pepsi. He likes Perrier.
The French Paul would like Diet Pepsi, though. That was the French Paul.
Lyndon in Colton, California, says, assuming Crumpler is physically able to play, do you see the Pats going after him, especially if Hernandez is out long-term?
For a blocking
slot receiver?
How much
do you think the play selection will change? Do you think the Pats will continue to put the other Gronk, another tight end on the field, and continue the two tight end plays? Or do you think they'll run more three wide receiver plays?
Yes.
That's what we think.
I don't think the offense will change much, and I don't think Crumpler will come back. Not now, anyway.
Not for this reason.
No.
Let's see. We got a lot of emails.
I think you might see him, as Andy said earlier, you might see him use a wide receiver in the Hernandez-type role.
By the way, Andy, Chris Canty was the Giant with that face mask.
Tremendous. You need to see that, Paul. It's awesome.
I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about.
Awesome.
Tony writes in. He says,
"Isn't he the guy having the Chicken McNuggets on the sideline in the preseason game here?"
I think he was. Wasn't he, Fred? The Chicken McNugget guy?
That was Chris Canty, yep.
He couldn't have got him through the holes in the thing, so he had to take his helmet off.
Leave it to Fat Paul to remember who was eating the Chicken McNuggets on the sideline.
Do you eat Chicken Nuggets?
No.
I don't care for them.
I don't really eat McDonald's all that often.
Yeah.
I don't.
In your bra. That doesn't even make sense.
No.
While I'm thrilled with the offense and with the plays made by the defensive playmakers, thank you, Andy, for making them understand their jobs, allow me for a moment.
Whoa, isn't McCourty one of the defensive playmakers?
And he made plays.
When? For which team?
He made a great play on the goal line.
I'm thinking Mayo.
As
Paul says, he's now our run-stuffing cornerback.
He made a great play on the goal line. I will say that.
Yeah, so that's the strength of his game now.
That quote-unquote Mayo play was 99% McCourty.
Mayo just cleaned up the scraps.
Tony says, allow me for a moment to join the chorus of the Fellowship of the Miserable led by Eric Negativino, who is not only the club president, he's also a member, and Paul Perillo, who usually can be identified through the radio by his enormously high pre-testicular drop laugh. Sorry, Paul, just kidding.
I do have a high laugh.
On
that
McCourty, it looks as though teams are challenging him over the top and to the outside when he has to turn his back fully to the quarterback. On those throws in particular, wide receivers appear to be getting late separation as McCourty looks back for the ball, and he's getting beaten consistently. In thinking back to last year, I don't recall that type of pass against him very often.
That's kind of what I was alluding to with teams
I have the impression that many or most of McCourty's picks and deflections came on plays where the quarterback either underthrew the ball intentionally or unintentionally, or as the wide receiver was cutting across the middle. So two questions on this. Is my memory of last year accurate or just self-serving for my argument? And two, could that be a weakness opposing teams have found on film and are exploiting? That's what Paul was saying.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I don't know enough, and I certainly haven't studied enough to know that for certain, but it seems to me that there were times, and Andy brought this up early in the show, when he did let guys run by him at times last year and played off his back hip, but didn't tend to get burnt with it because his ball skills were so exceptional. I think maybe the quarterback is throwing the ball in a different spot now, allowing that, say, okay, if that's how you want to play this, if we're going to let you go where you want to go, I'm going to throw it where you can't get it.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, if he's on the inside back hip and you're throwing it to the outside shoulder, that's a tough play to get your shoulders turned around and get in position to make a play on the ball.
And I do recall last year saying, wow, you know, McCourty seems to have that instinct to know when to look
to turn
back
around
for the ball.
And I think he's doing it now, but he's not in a position to make a play.
Right.
I think he's been looking a lot when the ball's getting caught, but he's not in a position to do anything about it. The Malcolm Floyd one was a perfect example of it. He wasn't torched down the sideline on that play, but the ball was put in a spot where he couldn't get it. And that's what good quarterbacks do.
The line of the week came in the press box when a certain media member said, maybe we got the wrong twin out there.
Yes.
You know, obviously his brother's not quite as good.
Take one guess as to who came up with that line.
Who
is the most negative Patriots writer you know?
Dave Prevere.
Paul Perillo.
The most negative Patriots writer you know?
Paul
Perillo.
That'd be you.
Ron Borges. Oh. Come on.
I wasn't really going to say it. It wasn't really for public consumption.
I don't think he would care either.
No,
he probably tweeted.
He would say, am I wrong?
Tiff writes in, I didn't listen to the pregame social.
Why not?
Solely because Andy and Paul went against the Pats. For someone as neurotic and anxious as I am pre-Pats game, I can't handle a Patriots pregame social with guys who have already said the Pats will lose. You guys should look at the pregame social numbers when you guys pick against the Pats. We might have a problem. And because I didn't listen, you guys cost me $100. How dare you? What do you think is
going... How do we cost you $100?
A gift card?
Oh, maybe.
The Auto Trader emailer of the week?
AutoTrader.com.
What do you think is going on with McCourty? Are you guys minimizing the effect the defense's change had on McCourty? Lastly, is it possible that Merriweather helped him more over the top than realized maybe McCourty needs a Merriweather? By the way, one of my friends is a Jets fan, and he loves attacking McCourty. So,
physically or?
Tiff, you'll be happy to know that our numbers were the highest pregame social yet this past week.
Even without you, because you were in a tiff.
That is true.
Good news is you can listen this week.
Yep.
I'm just, yes. I haven't made my selection yet.
I don't
want to
let
saying.
The cat out of the bag, but Andy and I both picked the Patriots this week.
Let's
actually,
see.
You can listen next week as well.
Who are we playing next? Oh, Raiders, Oakland. Yes.
Kevin writes in, hey, Fred, Paul, and D-Bag. What a fun
I
game
make no
to
promises
watch.
On
hey!
The next
Hey! That's me. It's good to be a Patriots fan. I have a couple questions. One, with the matchup advantage with Hernandez and Gronkowski, why are defenses covering those guys with linebackers and safeties? I think until a team is willing to load the field with corners, they are going to keep rolling. What do you think?
You can't cover Gronkowski with a corner.
Corners can't cover those guys.
He just turns his body.
I think a good-sized corner can cover Hernandez. Yeah, I don't think Gronkowski can be covered.
Not Gronk.
If they are on, unless the guy literally gets a good, solid piece of the ball, which we saw on one of those short throws,
yes,
that's you have to bat the ball down or you will not be making the play against Gronkowski. No chance.
The other part, you know, you mentioned, I agree with you. Maybe a good physical corner can cover Hernandez, but even then, Hernandez is 240, 245 right. pounds. So even a good-sized cornerback, you know, short of, what, Cromartie maybe? I mean, really doesn't have the size to do that.
Yep. Two, I listen to you guys with this total D-bag of a Chiefs fan. Of course, he's blaming the Chiefs ass-whooping on Matt Castle. Do you feel that Castle is the reason the Chiefs are so bad? Do you feel that the trade was a good one? Please remind Patriots Nation who we got for that pick.
Second round pick.
Right.
For Castle and Vrabel.
Right.
I think you could have gotten more than that.
Chiefs are in trouble, though.
Chiefs
huh?
are decimated by injuries, number one. Number two, I felt like they weren't as good as their 10-6 record indicated last year. And number
now
three,
they've lost Jamal Charles.
Well, they've lost a lot of people.
Eric Berry,
Tony Moiaki, Jamal Charles. There were
three Pro Bowl caliber players.
That's 3-13 season waiting to happen. I also feel like they benefited from a ridiculously soft schedule last year, and unfortunately, all these injuries are going to render that whole point moot.
Brooklyn Matt says, hey, Andy, a guy is nice enough to call all the way from France, and after he hangs up, you describe the Pats' defense as stinking like a French armpit.
No, he said they're defense stinks.
You are truly tasteless.
Like
oh, and by
like
the
a
way,
French armpit? I didn't remember him saying that.
Taste. Oh, and by the way, the armpits on my French model girlfriend smell just fine. Suck on that one.
I'm sure you and him have a great relationship.
Oh, wow.
That was well done right there by the big-headed one.
That's a victory for me. Suck it, Brooklyn.
Josh says, apparently Josh from Waterloo has never been to Seahawks Stadium. There are bleacher seats on one end and regular seats on the other. There is no open end to that stadium, and it is not wide open. They have huge overhangs for the rain that help trap sound in the stadium. Calm down, doofus.
It's pretty open on the end.
It's open. That one end looks like a football.
They have
Hawks,
the crow's
that Hawks nest.
Nest. Hawks nest.
Yeah.
It's open. Just because there's – I mean, I would consider Gillette Stadium to be open too.
Right, but it's not really open.
But it's not really open. There's seats in the end zone.
And there's the whole big thing over
but
this.
But they do have that overhang, which might trap sound. I don't know. It is loud there. They're very good
It's
fans.
Ridiculously loud there.
Yeah.
Kansas City, too.
The last part was the key. They're very good fans. Right?
They are.
Okay.
I think the problem here is not because we don't have good fans, and it's not because they don't want to come and make noise. I think that in between the 30-yard lines, you have the club seats. And those are typically people that don't want to make a lot of noise.
I disagree, because it wasn't good at the old Foxborough Stadium either.
Fred, are you telling me that those aren't the highest-priced seats in
they
the place?
Are. They are, but what's the explanation for Foxborough Stadium, the old stadium?
They stunk the whole time they inhabited
it. Oh, come on.
They had paper bags on their heads they couldn't yell through.
Come on, Paul.
Am I wrong on that?
Over that time, the Patriots were better than the Chiefs, but the Chiefs were still loud.
The Patriots were better than the Chiefs over the previous 40 years of their existence?
No, in the 90s.
I disagree with you.
Okay, well.
The Chiefs were, Marty Schottenheimer's Chiefs were putting up 13-3s and choking in the first round of the playoffs every year while we were going 1-15.
Let me tell you something. The Patriots didn't then go 1-15. And when was that?
The 90s, to what you just alluded to.
Look, listen to me. The Foxborough Stadium.
This is where he's going to go in a big circle and make me look like an idiot. Watch.
This has nothing to do with the stadium, Paul. It's nothing to
I
do
didn't
with
say
the
anything about the stadium.
You did.
I said the people in the red seats aren't there to make a lot of noise. Don't blame it on the stadium.
I think
what I said is don't blame it on the
I
stadium.
I think New England fans in general are just too cool to be those kind of fans.
See, I just think that the people in the club seats are clients. They're not there to be rowdy on third down and listen to John Rook and imploring them to yell first down. They're there to sip on their wine and eat their cheese. That's what they do. It's like the 80s Celtics crowds, corporate crowds.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that the Boston Garden wasn't loud in the 80s?
Not at the end of the...
Oh, no. Are you kidding
John
me?
John Rook, you've been around.
Yeah.
You think I'm wrong on that?
Games.
That was not a corporate crowd late in that...
In the
game? Big Three era?
Late in the Big Three era?
Yeah. The original Big Three.
The original Big Three? I would say that's part of the reason they had
very,
the problems
very
that they had.
Very, very corporate crowd.
Let me tell you something. They would stand up during commercial breaks and not sit down and be cheering the whole commercial break.
You're talking about before.
Talking Larry Bird era.
Yeah, not the end. Not at the end of the mid to late 80s.
Not
no
in the
way.
Dave Gavitt era.
Oh, forget it then.
Okay.
That
was,
it
was over when you know, Gavitt got rid of
You're thinking
soul.
About when they
it
won titles, in, you know, in 84.
Sure.
Yeah, it was wild then. Tell me what it was like in 88.
I don't know. I didn't go there.
It was a corporate crowd.
Yeah, because you couldn't get tickets anymore because the rich guys had the tickets.
Exactly. And that's, I think, the reason the prime noise-making spots in Gillette Stadium are and this is, listen, I'm not blaming anybody. You make money. This is how life is in sports.
It's a business.
It's a business.
Not
and
a
that's
game.
That's the number one goal. But the people that are sitting there are not there to be up on third down with a D in one hand and a fence in the other. Those aren't the guys that are sitting in the club seats. That's not the dog pound.
They're actually on their iPhones checking the little thing that you allow them to use with technology.
I don't blame. Listen, I'm not blaming anybody. I think it's just kind of a fact of the way it is.
All right, we got to get out of here. John Rook's got
a lot
to nitpick this
week. I just remember complaining about the crowd at Foxborough as well.
You want to nitpick
on that?
I'm not
denying
during winning years.
No, nitpick on the defense.
But don't you think that the same kind of thing went into play?
No.
Okay.
Foxborough was supposed to be this blue-collar stadium. That had nothing to do with it.
Just because the stadium itself
was
crap
one time.
I just think that when you start winning and you start getting the corporate crowd, they're not making as much noise.
Well, that's also true.
That's what I'm talking about.
It might be over.
Plus, I also think
there was nothing wrong
complacent
with the Garden's acoustics either. But
Acoustics.
All right.
The linguist over there.
They're also, just one last quick, they're also spoiled. Brady said that. They're spoiled. They expect them to win in the end, so why do I have to exert my energy to think that I could have an impact? They're going to win in the end anyway. They always do.
Well. It's disappointing. We've done all your nitpicks for you. So you can have positive show today, John. You don't have nothing to nitpick. We took care
then
of it.
Then it's no
all.
Fun, Fred. I just might as well go home
it's
with
not
my
his style.
To death. He can't have that type of show.
So John's here. What's going on in the playbook?
Well, it's pretty clear to see that, you know, even though the team is 2-0, that there are some things that we, you know, need to address in terms of trying to get this football team better, to get it where everybody seems to think it, you know, needs to be.
Right.
I find it a little bit strange that, you know, we're going to sit here and pick nits on the fact that, you know, the team is rolling up an offense that is on course to be well past what it was in 2007, but 2 weeks into the season,
right,
we don't know how it's going to go.
It's too early.
So
you need about 6-7 weeks before you see.
But we're on pace. We're on course. So let's kind of see how it goes. I do believe that Buffalo will be more of a threat this week than most people think they will be.
Probably.
They scored more points than the Patriots.
Well, that's
you heard it here first, John Rip.
Picking the Bills.
Bills upset.
Tyan Fitzpatrick.
Tons of emails that we didn't get to that John will join him. And, of course, Pete Shepard at 4 o'clock with the Pete Shepard Show. We'll see you tomorrow. Everybody hands go up. And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there. Cause all I do is sweep, sweep, sweep. And if you go in need, put your hands. That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.